It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, they're back from yesterday's Microsoft EDU event. We're going to talk about the new Surface laptop, Teams for Education, Intune for Education, and the new Windows 10S. It's all next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 516, recorded Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017. Gong yourself! Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/windows. And by Cloudflare, the operating system for the edge of the internet. More than 6 million websites, apps, APIs, and SaaS companies use Cloudflare's services to load fast, stay secure, and weather whatever the internet throws at them. For a free online chat session with a Cloudflare support engineer, visit cloudflare.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest news from Microsoft with two of the premier journalists in the industry. Mary Jo Foley, she writes all about Microsoft for ZDNet at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul Thurrott, who scribbles at THURROTT.com, Thurrott.com, and writes the books at leanpub.com. And they're both here today off of their exciting evening and day. You had an evening with Panos Panay. I saw him peering in the window at Rattle and Hum. Did you not let him in?
That was a homeless person, Leo.
Okay. How did the meetup go the night before the event?
Good.
Hey.
We had a nice crowd for a Monday night.
Fun. And then, of course, yesterday, I thought a surprisingly interesting Microsoft EDU event.
Yeah, before we get off too far down the tangent of congratulating Microsoft on everything they did yesterday, I would like to just do what I do and point out that the little storytelling thing that they're doing now is pretty lousy.
It's funny that you should say that because I commented yesterday in our stream that clearly they'd all been trained.
It's so awful. You know, it's like the lights dimly come up and he's telling a story about
his grandfather.
Yeah. Yeah, no, his grandfather. You know, it's like you sort of assumed it was going to be about him. And then he says his grandfather. You're like,
oh,
what?
Satya. Yeah.
I know. I kept waiting for him to say, and it was me.
I think that stuff is a little much.
Too much.
They had a consultant.
Well, that guy needs to be talked to. So my advice simply is stories are fine. I like the storytelling stuff. Shorter stories, better stories, maybe.
It always
a little more transition between stories and talking.
You can see this consultant's influence is when it's, I think, a bad thing, right?
Too much.
Yeah.
A little heavy handed.
Well, especially when you can just compare it to everything else they've ever done, and it's so different and it's weird. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to insult people, certainly, and whatever, but you know, if you thought the creators update was a little weird, you know, the event they had last October, I mean, this one went right off the deep end. Now, that said, by the way, I want to be fair, the rest of it was pretty freaking awesome, wasn't it? I mean, it was a really good event.
It was a great event. In fact, I would say I think they learned a little from the creators update. And I think, you know, I particularly enjoyed the, and they didn't, you know, one thing they didn't do also, which I thought was odd, they didn't announce the presenters, like who they are and what they do. And
I actually, for me, I found that a little odd because it's like here are the members of INXS. You already know all their names. And no, actually, we don't.
Right.
And, you know, I thought that was a little weird, but.
But we're trying to keep track of it and put lower thirds up and stuff.
Exactly.
So maybe our goals are different. But some of them, like the very tall woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There were some of them that were so good and so attractive. Yeah. That yep, I thought yep. These are like paid actors. These are like paid presenters. So
no, they're not.
I know they're not, and it would have been really good, I think, maybe to say,
Oh, yeah. And by the way, you know, she works she's a developer who works. I mean, I would just like to have known.
Mm-hmm. So that woman you're talking about and some of the other people there are familiar to some of us. I think Mary Jo knows exactly who that is, for example.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm forgetting her name right now, but she presented in October at the Creators Update. She's the mixed reality specialist.
She's the one we saw last
February
as well.
She was very impressive. Right. I mean, I thought she was really good.
She was great.
She's really good.
Would have been really neat to know who she was. you know, small
I can find out. I'll find out as we're talking.
Well, it was odd that they didn't really say. And I guess
it was funny. When they announced Panos, Terry said, here's Panos, you know. And I was like, yeah, just like Beyonce, Panos is just Panos now, you know.
And he's wearing the tuxedo jacket with a black T-shirt, straight out of a last Sunday Silicon Valley episode, actually.
I know, right?
But you got to love Panos. In fact, we're talking about it. And I said to Ed Bott was doing it with me yesterday. I said, I know this is heresy, but sometimes Panos reminds me of the guy in the bar that you kind of edge down the bar to get away from. And Ed said, you know, when you're in his presence, there's a reality distortion field or something. He's dynamic and charismatic. And so, and that's something I don't know about. But
I had a lengthy conversation with a friend from Microsoft on the way home last night on the train, and over the phone. And, he was telling me, you know, that one of the things people on the outside probably don't understand on the inside is that he engenders an incredible amount of loyalty.
Exactly what Ed was saying.
For him. And it's a big difference between the us versus them mentality that used to grip some parts of the company in the past. and if you think about what they were announcing yesterday, these are some of the stuff all falls under Terry's org, obviously, but some of Terry Meyerson, to give a last name for a change. but some of it doesn't, right? So they had to really kind of cross boundaries here to pull all this stuff together. And I think you mentioned, Leo, that this was better in many ways than the Creators Update event from last October, Mary Jo maybe, but it absolutely was. And there were many reasons for that. There was more of a cohesive feel to it, but actually, you know, a big part of it is they're going to ship everything they just described, by the way. This stuff is already done or mostly done. Well, I know, but they are, right? You know, if you
I'm thinking about the mixed reality when I'm saying we'll see.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah.
So the woman, by the way, who did demo the mixed reality stuff, her name is Megan Saunders. She's a GM at Microsoft who is responsible for HoloLens and other emerging technologies. So she's very high up there at Microsoft.
She was they were all impressive.
They were good.
Yeah, there were a lot of really good
presenters. Terry actually was the one struggling, but I understood that was because his prompter failed.
Yeah.
By the way, I thought he did great. So
I thought he did too.
Because, and I said it because there was a moment where one of the teleprompters was to the right of us, and you could kind of sense like a flashing light effect, and it just went dark.
Yeah.
So I looked up and I kind of elbowed Brad and I said, watch for a meltdown because that thing just shut off. And actually, I thought he did great.
No,
I mean,
he did.
Someone said, you know, because it would be very easy to start, but you know, and he didn't really do any of that at all. I thought he did really, really well.
Yeah. No, it was impressive all around. It was interesting to see him taking Brian Roper's job.
You know, really
it's
funny.
It's a one-to-one replacement.
Joe Belfiore was at this event.
I don't understand why Joe didn't show up.
I know.
We all thought this is his baby. This is Joe's triumphant return.
I texted Mary Jo last night. I texted her on the train, and I said, here's a weird one from tonight, or from today. I said, we met Joe. He was there. He had nothing to do with the public part of the presentation.
Right, everything to do, I understand, with the education focus, right?
That's his thing. Advocate. His title is like advocate for education as part of the Windows team, right?
And Ed implied that it was because of his sabbatical and the time he spent educating and traveling with his own children that he suddenly was very focused on this.
Sure.
Yes, that's an interesting narrative.
He came back. Oh, you don't believe it? Oh, all right.
No, I mean, I think it's a little convenient. It's definitely influencing it, for sure.
Okay.
Well, something invigorated them. Maybe just the raw numbers of Chrome beating their tuchus.
Maybe.
But I'm now looking at my Surface book and going,
piece of crap.
Sigh. I did order for review, but I immediately ordered the new Surface laptop. And well, before we get into that, let's let's talk about what you guys didn't in your give me a lineup of what order you want to talk about this stuff. So it's all yours.
Okay.
Oh, I mean,
whatever you want to talk about. What do you
want? Go down any path you want, Leo.
Yeah.
Except for the mixed reality one.
Yeah.
So they start off with Satya Nadella and his grandpa, which I thought was interesting.
An interesting
sweet.
Thing.
Yeah.
I guess. Okay.
And you know, a lot of the people in the audience were teachers, and there were a few students.
That's
so
interesting.
That's who you heard clapping. Those, when you heard the thunderous applause.
that was not Microsoft employees.
No, that was the teachers, I think.
Okay.
Who seemed to have been pre-briefed to some extent about what was happening based on a couple of them I talked to.
Fair enough.
That was interesting.
Fair enough. They were told what to say and expect.
Yeah. I mean, what we were expecting going in was Microsoft was going to talk about Windows Cloud. And that's what they did kind of lead off with, which was Windows 10S, the new name for Windows Cloud. And I found it really interesting to read different people's takes on what the letter S stood for in this product
priceless.
Name. Bloomberg, which from their story yesterday that I read later, they were pre-briefed a month ago about this. And they were told S was meant to stand for a luxury brand like the Mercedes 10S, I guess. Is that a car brand?
No.
There's a Mercedes something a, S?
No. Well,
they put it in their story. I don't know. I know nothing about it.
No, right. Like, so Audi will add letters to the, like, they have like R series or R type or.
Right. Yeah. So that's what they were told. I was told it stood for security, simplicity, and superior performance. Which was
which they
were
had
words
up on stage.
That were said, yes.
Yeah.
And Terry Myerson said it stood for soul at one point.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Well,
soul, no.
Yeah.
Right.
I think I scholastic. I think is the.
It didn't stand for school. They were very adamant when I asked that.
It's not school. It's not student. It's not study.
I thought
it's
store.
Not scholastic.
Store.
No, by the way, it stands for streamlined.
It is kind of that.
It does.
I have to say, the thing that
Everyone's
really opened my mind to this was that they're, you know, we were worried they were going to make another netbook, right?
Right.
And maybe their OEMs will.
First of all, no, we weren't. I wasn't.
We weren't.
I've been saying since the beginning of the year, there will be premium laptops running this software.
You were absolutely right.
And that's what you just pre-ordered.
And you know? I love it that they're offering a free upgrade to Windows 10 Pro. Through the end of the year. And
they
even after that it's $50.
Right?
That's a great. What it tells me though is I'm not it's not like Windows RT where I'm locking myself into something.
Right.
Yes, but you know there's a couple of fears around this. One is that uneducated consumers, which, you know, consumers, I mean anybody, and I don't mean that
normies.
It's a hard thing to communicate to someone that you just bought a version of Windows that doesn't run Windows applications. It doesn't really make any sense. You know, a lot of people don't understand the distinction.
I don't know. I feel like the world is ready for that, and I think this is a real... Now, let me ask you, do you think that would be more... Because you're Windows Store only, UWP only, what's the... I know. You're talking about normies.
No, I'm talking about what people actually do. The number one and two most used Windows applications on Earth
are Chrome.
Are Chrome and iTunes.
Yeah. iTunes.
Like, neither of which
you can like
use.
It or not, but that's a fact. So,
that's
this version
upgrade.
Of Windows does not run those two things is in fact very serious.
Yeah.
And so I think offering this free upgrade from now through the end of the year is a great idea. Mm-hmm. Because it gets rid of that problem.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But the other problem with this $50 fee, which is, you know, like you said, is reasonable for what you're doing. You know, it feels like a little bit of a bait and switch, right? When you don't know what this is, you know, what's happening, like to the normal people. You know, the story that I tell that is sort of like this is when I went to Vegas in January for CES, and I had already paid through Expedia for the hotel. And so the woman said, well, there's $35 a day in resort fees. Do you want me to put those on the bill, on the credit card
know,
right now.
I hate that.
I said, what are you talking about? I already paid for this. And she said, no, buried in the fine print somewhere in there was the hotel reserves the right to blah, 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 whatever it was. And it felt like a bait and switch. Like it was a little like it was an after the fact.
Yep.
Sure. Well, that's what this is going to feel like to people.
Yep.
I'm not saying that's what it is. Microsoft, it will do an excellent job of explaining this to people. PC makers who choose to sell these devices at retail will try to do some job, you know. But I am saying that normal people will buy this thing and will be confused when the first thing they go to do,
that's a good point,
download Chrome, will not work.
Can Google and Apple add iTunes and Chrome to the store? They can make
if
UWP
they want
versions.
To. Yeah. If they want to.
Why wouldn't they want to?
Oh, many reasons.
Yeah. Well, the best way why would they want to do Microsoft. Something to help Microsoft's platform?
Great.
You could make the argument for combined customers and how it's doing the right thing for people, and I would agree with you. I honestly, one of the most amazing things that could happen this year would be that Chrome does become a Windows Store, you know, Centennial app. That'd be fantastic.
Do you think that will happen?
No.
No, me neither.
No, I don't. I'd love for that to happen. I mean, that one thing alone would put Windows 10S over the top for me. And by the way, to be fair to Microsoft, the advantages that they speak of, performance, reliability, security, all that's the streamline, whatever, you know.
That's what people want.
It's real. Yeah. You know, that's real.
So that was going to be my question. Is this more secure?
Yes.
Why?
Because right now, Win32 apps are the Wild West. They can do anything they want to your computer.
Right.
You know, and you as a normal person, not you, but one as a normal person would install and click yes on the user account control box because you want to get the app installed. And you just installed malware and you have no idea. Apps that are delivered through the store can't do that. There's also a kind of a performance thing that goes along. You know, people talk about, you know, Windows Rot or something. I actually think that's a little behind us. But more to the point, was one thing that's very real is you could install perfectly legitimate applications. Chrome, actually, and iTunes are great examples. Anything that Adobe makes is a great example. Your PC maker will install utilities that do the same thing. What they do is they run at startup and they start looking for updates. Mm-hmm. And so in an education environment, that's deadly because you're rebooting the system fresh every time a new class comes in. That's a massive delay. But even for a normal human being, if you look in your little startup folder or your, you know, in Task Manager, you'll see an incredible laundry list of things that are starting up at boot time. Yeah. And UWP apps can't do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it kind of goes on and on. I mean, there's a bunch of reasons why this is better.
You know, in theory, I understand why this is better. I've never really felt like I was in danger by downloading apps not through the store.
What if, here's a scenario. Here's the most common scenario. Yeah, I get an email and it says, here's a file I need you to work on overnight so you can have it in the morning for our meeting. Mm-hmm. And you open it.
Right.
Will this protect you against that? You still could get ransomware that way, right?
No, because
it won't run as an application.
Right. There was the Win32 apps. You can't can't deliver a UWP ransomware app.
Perfect.
It really is more secure. And by the way, Mary Jo, you know, you're smarter than most people. Yeah. And
I don't know. I'm kind of normal.
No, but you're okay.
You're smarter than most people.
You're in the middle stage where you've been educated.
Yeah.
You have heard time and time again, don't open attachments, be careful where you get stuff from, keep your system updated. You know all the things that I would say sophisticated Windows user knows. Anybody listening to this show knows.
Right.
But she's also not apt to randomly test software just for the hell of it.
No.
There's a whole category of people, including mostly a lot of teenagers who will be using these.
True.
Who, I mean, you should see my son, Michael, 14.
He'll download anything, right?
Has been, I've drilled it into him.
Yeah.
But he still doesn't, you know, he still could get bit easily.
Oh, yeah, of course.
He's gotten better. But you know, every time I go on his machine, I go, so I know what you're saying, Paul. There's a vast and probably, 3/4 of the Windows users.
But this is a conundrum, right? Because on the one hand, you have this thing that is going to be faster, more secure, more reliable and stable, right? It only runs apps that are curated by Microsoft through the store. There's some benefit to that, certainly. But it doesn't do anything you want it to do. Well, not anything. Right. I mean, it you know, it's like the Windows Phone problem all over again, right? You know, I always tell the story about my friend Jeff who loved Windows Phone, stuck with the Windows Phone, but then one day he couldn't use it to pay for parking at the train. Well, that's the one thing that put it over the edge for him, right? And everyone has that one thing. And I think on PCs, it could be big things like Chrome and iTunes, right? Or Adobe Suite or whatever. It could be small things. Like I have some brand of printer and it's I can do basic printing with it using a, you know, I don't think they call it this, but like, I guess a class driver or an inbox driver, whatever it's called. But what I really need to do is install the Epson, HP, Dell, whatever the software is, because that thing allows me to do color control and determine this or that, or whatever it is. And guess what? You can't do that on Windows 10 S. And it's a little thing, you know, it's a little thing, I know. But those are the things that put people over the edge. It's when the new thing becomes a disruption, right? It's no longer a benefit. And that's the gap that they have to cross.
Yep. I think, you know, as much as not being able to install Chrome is a big deal, I think the fact that Edge is forever your default browser, even if Google put Chrome in the store, Edge is your default browser. That's it. And Bing is the only allowable search engine. Those are pretty big deals.
So, by the way, to that point, the Bing thing, you're right. That would make me crazy. Yeah. Oddly enough, I'm looking at my computer now to make sure this is the case, because I think it is. This is certainly true in a lot of computers. So if it's not true on this one, why can't I find anything? Let me just look. Sorry, this is taking so long. Web browser. My default web browser on this computer is Microsoft Edge, and I never use Microsoft Edge. And that has not impacted my life that much. So in other words, if I click on a hyperlink in MetroTwit, which I use for Twitter, it actually opens Edge. Right, because that's the default browser. But I really just use Chrome day to day. So it's you know, you can get around that. The bigger issue is that you're allowed to install any app that, or any web browser that's in the store. You have your range of choices, and I don't know if you've ever looked at the web browsers that are in the Windows Store, but it basically amounts to Bob's browser, Chris's browser. You know, it's like these little. It's not Firefox. Right. It's not Opera. It's certainly not Chrome. And that's a huge problem.
Right. So yeah, I mean, I think there are things that different things are going to trigger people, right? Like I've seen people tweeting, there's no Windows subsystem for Linux and Bash in Windows 10S. That's it. I'm out. It's like, well this isn't really meant for developers, guys.
Yeah. And by the way, this actually cuts to the heart of a side issue that I've been trying to investigate with Raphael, you know, could I as an individual download Chrome.exe from Google, wrap it in a Centennial container, and run this thing as a desktop bridge application.
Side-loaded app, right?
Yeah.
Is what you're asking.
So
they've got to be blocking sideloads. They've got
to. Yeah, it won't work because that requires developer mode in settings, which is not available in Windows 10S, right? So you could do that in Windows 10 Pro, which kind of defeats the point because I could, you know, it's still going to have all these other things going on on the system. So, yeah, it's kind of it's a weird situation. I asked Microsoft ahead of the event if they ever considered doing something that I think would be fairly elegant if they could figure it out, which is someone with Windows 10S goes to Chrome.exe, it downloads an Edge, right? It'll be the one time they ever use Edge to install Chrome. And when you double click on it, instead of coming up with a dialogue that says, sorry, you can't do this, we only accept apps from the store, it wraps it in a Centennial container for you, right? Because you could do this as an individual. And they could certainly do it at the platform level. It might be a little, you know, there might be some weird gray areas there, but, and the answer basically is they looked at all kinds of things, including that, and it's not happening.
It's interesting how they built Windows 10S is they started with Windows 10 Pro. And if you look at the, it's a kind of a splinter of Windows 10 Pro, and a lot of things that you can do in S are kind of surprising, right? Like Windows Update for Business is there, mobile device management, BitLocker is there, enterprise state roaming with Azure AD, Azure AD domain join, but not on-premises Azure, Active Directory domain join. Yeah. So there's like a lot of things you'd be like, oh, because I think a lot of people, when they heard yesterday's presentation, they said, oh, this is a stripped-down version of Windows. It's the low-end. It's a simple version, right?
But that's what the S stands for, by the way, stripped down.
I wish they would tell us one thing that the S stood for.
You know what? Microsoft, even when there is a thing that it stands for, refuses to acknowledge that thing. You know, like Windows CE stood for consumer electronics. Everyone involved with that project, to the day they die, will demand that that is not the case. You know, Windows NT, we know, stood for new technology. Nope.
No, it didn't. Yeah, it did.
No one ever said that. You know, in this case, it's funny because its names are, in fact, legion, right? I mean, we do have dozens of possible names that all make sense, sort of.
Yeah.
Better than Windows 10 Cloud. I think we can all agree on that.
Oh, yeah. I was really happy they didn't stay with Windows 10 Cloud. I think that would have been an extremely confusing and fake name. Fake news, fake name. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing really about cloud in this thing. I mean, well, there isn't.
Right. I mean, I'm not going to defend it.
I mean, everyone's like, oh, you download apps from the store. I'm like, does that make it a cloud operating system?
Well, you can manage it from the cloud, right? You have Azure AD, Windows Intune, all work.
Yeah. Kind of a stretch. And, you know, I think if they called it cloud, people would have been like, oh, here it is, Windows 365, right? They're going to now make us subscribe, which is not the case. So, I'm happy they did that.
So here's what I want to see, though. For the next 9 months or whatever that is, so I can't do simple math, 7 months, whatever. The upgrade to Windows 10 Pro will be free if you get Windows 10S on a computer, any computer. So,
and you get Office for a year free.
Yep, that's right.
That's a pretty good deal, I think. Yeah.
But how do you get Windows 10S? So it comes on new devices. How else can you get it?
That's it.
Can you? So there's nowhere you're going to be able to go download it from a MSDN.
Well, that's an open question, actually, because they're going to...
You have to make it available.
I don't know if this has changed, but they're going to allow Windows Insiders to get it.
Yeah,
you have to make it. And so there'll be ways to acquire it. I mean, it would make sense that it would be on MSDN, frankly. I think organizations are going to want to test it and so forth and whatever. But I never heard explicitly
about that. Consumers can't get it any other way.
But if we flash forward to January 1st, right, Microsoft will be sitting on a treasure trove of data that will show them how many people are running this thing, how many people upgraded this thing to Pro, right? Because they will know. They will know. This is part of their little data collection thing. And then they will be able to evaluate how well this transition is going. But the other part of that time period that will really kind of demonstrate success or lack of success is going to be if any other major applications come to the store. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is one of those chicken egg problems that Microsoft has not done too well with in the past. You know, Adobe Creative Suite or iTunes or, you know, Chrome, neither of which I expect to see. But, you know, Adobe's been dipping their toes in the water. They announced very quickly that Spotify is coming to the store. Very interesting.
Microsoft loved that. They made a big deal about that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which so is surprising this is, they have Groove, right? But, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so I had not seen this number, but Ed quoted it from somewhere. He said there are 500 Centennial apps in the store right now. I've never seen that number anywhere before.
I couldn't name five, so I'm not. Yeah, I don't know.
I know. I don't know a lot of them.
How many are major Centennial apps? Three.
The big ones are Office, right? Office, as of yesterday, we got the official confirmation. Office Centennial is coming. Like they're bringing the Office apps.
But actually, by the way, can we beat this one to death? Because I have no idea what this means. And let me tell you quickly what I think it is, and then please tell me I'm wrong.
Okay.
There's something called Office 365 Education, which only includes Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote.
Versions only.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yep.
It's not the suite apps like the 2016 apps?
Not right now. And you can upgrade to a paid version to get the downloadable apps, but they right now, if you subscribe, you get the online ones.
Okay, but that's going to change, right? Isn't that what's changing here with the store apps? The store versions of the apps will be free, right? So we've already run into our first stumbling block.
I don't know if the store apps will be free.
Okay, well, I do not know. This part I do know to be the case. They're not porting random versions of Office apps to the Centennial. It's basically Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, which is already there. Well. Already free.
OneNote's not a Centennial version.
It's not a Centennial. It will be. No. I think that no. Okay. No. Well, what's the fourth one? Because there are four.
The fourth one is OneNote, but not a Centennial version. Just the UWP version.
All right. This is even worse than I thought. All right.
I know.
So
it's worse
than
you thought. Yeah.
If you look at what they wrote, and this is in the Office blog, so maybe somewhere else they say differently. They're not talking about putting those applications in the store for everybody. They're talking about putting them in the Windows Store for Education.
No.
Okay, good.
I know the real reason for this.
Okay,
so when the Office apps that they're first going to port using Centennial. So Centennial is this thing. It's the code name for the desktop bridge. It's how you wrap Win32 apps and you put them in the store. So Microsoft's been working to take their own Office apps, starting with Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, wrap them with the desktop bridge, and put them in the store. They're going to test these first with students who are subscribers to Office 365 Education. In June, only people who subscribe to Office 365 Education will get to test these Centennial apps. But in the fall, when they go GA, they will be open to anyone. They'll be in the Windows Store too then.
They will. Okay. Because by the way, it doesn't say that in the Office blogs anywhere.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. But it's only those apps, just those handful.
Yep. So to start.
Okay. You're saying over time they're going to add more.
I asked them, over time, will you add the other Office apps like Access and Publisher and things like that? Yeah, and they said, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
The two apps they are not going to wrap, which is very interesting to me, are OneNote and Sway, both of which are very much used in education. But the reason they're not doing it, they said, is we already have UWP versions and full desktop versions. We don't really need to have Centennial versions of those because they're already in the store as UWP versions.
So OneNote UWP ships with Windows 10.
Yep.
Which is kind of interesting. You can get OneNote 2016 for free from the web, OneNote.com. Mm-hmm. Anyone can. And then Sway, you're right. There's a UWP version. And then I think that's it. There's just basically
a web client. Yeah, I don't think there's a desktop, right? Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Supposed to be at one point. I'm not sure if they're still doing it. So my guess is these apps are not going to be free when they're Centennial versions in the store, but I don't know that for a fact.
I can't imagine they're going to be free, but what I would like to be able to do is get everything from the store, right? In other words, one of the nice things, if this transition could ever just happen, it'd be so nice just to go into your download, your library page in the store and say, I want this, And, okay. So no time, what happened was they announced this and then everyone ran to the Windows Store to see if they could go download Word 2016 or whatever. And it's not there. And what you're saying is it won't be there until the end of the year sometime or after the fall.
Yeah, fall.
In the fall sometime. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. So one thing you should know about the Centennial versions of the Office apps, well, a couple things versus the full desktop version. So say Centennial Word versus regular Word, the full desktop version of Word. What's different is Centennial you can only get in 32-bit. They are not going to make it a 64-bit version at all. That's not happening. And no COM add-in support for the Centennial ones. You only can do web add-ins, but not COM. So that's a big deal for people who are business customers more than anybody. They're the ones who need all the COM add-ins for things like Excel and PowerPoint and Word. But this whole thing they described, the Centennial versions of Office, these are not for business customers. They're going to make them only for home, consumer, and education. These are not going to be licensable by business customers on Office 365 business plans. Maybe one day they will. They said to me, maybe one day, but not anytime soon.
That's actually what I was getting to a little while ago because, if you download today the Word Mobile from the Windows Store, it doesn't really do much by itself. You pretty much have to sign into an Office 365 account of some kind. If you buy a new computer today, sometimes it actually has Office 365 installed. But in either case, what you're really doing is just signing in. So in other words, it would be nice if this stuff was just available all in one place, meaning the Windows Store. I could select the suite or even the apps, God forbid, that I wanted and just sign into them. Right. And then depending on what kind of account I had, it would just happen. So anyway.
So the reason, one big reason Microsoft did this, bringing Centennial versions of Office to the store, they told me, is they want to make it a proof point for other software vendors. They want them to say, look, Microsoft could do it. We can do it. It's possible. Like they took a really complex, very profitable app franchise that they have, and they put this in the store.
What does it say about UWP? Because Microsoft also ported its Office apps to UWP. They created brand new versions of them. They're like Tinker Toys. Now Microsoft is centennializing the real apps. Doesn't this make UWP look like the toy that it is?
They already kind of do this, but they're going to be permanently calling UWP versions of Office apps mobile. So if you see in the store Word Mobile, it means it's the UWP version and it's mostly meant for mobile devices, phones and or tablets, but you could use the Centennial version on your tablet if you want. So there, I feel like, I almost feel like yesterday's announcement about the Centennial apps is paving the way for something to be announced next week at Build that's going to make them step back from UWP a little bit and kind of reposition it. I don't think they're going to say, we're done with UWP. I think they're going to say, you know what, UWP is good for mobile apps, and Centennial is the way we are hoping that now are hoping that developers bring their Win32 apps to the store.
I agree with you 100%. Raphael does a lot of work with Centennial. I've actually spoken to a couple of people about Centennial just in the past 24 hours, actually. And pretty much universally, there is this agreement that Centennial is something really special, that they've done something wonderful with Centennial. Because the age-old problem with these kinds of software platforms and moving from one development technology to another is, you created this gigantic, hairy desktop app in the past. iTunes is a great example. And Microsoft Office apps are a great example. And now this new platform arrives. And are you going to just like start it over from scratch every single time? That doesn't actually make a lot of sense. So you can take this thing and bring it into the new world and add UWP features, right? The Centennial versions of Microsoft Office applications, the desktop applications, can take advantage of the updating infrastructure you get through the store. Automatically. They don't have to have their own updater anymore, you know? I mean, that alone is just a benefit. But then you can start cherry picking the little features you want. You can integrate with notifications, live tiles, you know, whatever it might be. But yeah, I, you know, like brand new greenfield development on Windows, it's kind of not happening anymore, you know? It seems like the web and is maybe where it's at. Mobile is where it's at for popular mobile platforms. And then Centennial is a way to bring things into the, you know, into the future.
You implied that Centennial is just a wrapper.
It's a container. It's a way to think of it.
Oh, it's a container, like Docker. It's a container.
It's it's what it is literally is AppV. I don't know if you remember that the Microsoft virtualization solution.
So if I'm using a Centennial version of Office, it's identical to desktop Office.
That's right.
Not exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
What's different?
No COM add-in support.
Right. I mean, it's no, but it's the same app. I mean, it's
stuff that will require communication to the desktop out through the dock or to the container. That kind of stuff.
Well, what the container does is virtualize the system to the app. So in other words,
so system communication would be trickier.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the divide is between COM add-ins and web type add-ins. I do know that in the Office world, those web add-ins are the new type of add-ins, right? They're the modern platform. COM add-ins are legacy feature. And so there might be some low-level communication going on there that is prevented by this UWP wrapper or the container.
But those things, I mean, come on. I mean, is that a big deal?
For business customers.
Oh, because there's some plugins and things, add-ons.
It's specific to Office. Like, in other words, COM add-ins are things from Office because Office has been around for 1,000 years.
Right.
I mean, it's
so you know, it's okay. For most people, Word will work the same.
It will look the same. It will literally be the same. Yes.
In fact, they're calling it, like, when you go to the store as a customer, you're just going to see Word. You're not going to see Word Centennial and Word Full Desktop.
They show, for instance, Photoshop. They showed the Photoshop I buy in the Microsoft store now, in the online store,
is literally identical.
The same.
And by the way, I use it every single day. I had been using it every single day before they put it in the store. I bought it from Adobe directly. I bought it again just to get it from the store because it's a much more liberal licensing scheme than what Adobe was offering for their own products. Mm-hmm. I am curious to see what it means when Adobe Photoshop Elements 16 comes out, right? Like today, I don't know that we have a sense of version upgrades. You know, back in the day, because I had previously bought the product, when a new version came out, I could get it for half price. How will that work?
So I subscribed to Lightroom and Photoshop for $10 a month.
Well, that's a different. But that's
a different, not going to count, and I'm not going to be able to use it on the S.
Right. That's correct. Yeah.
That's an Adobe licensing issue. If they wanted to, they could do that, obviously.
And the hope is they will. And that's what I'm talking about. That time frame between now and the end of the year, what we want to see is more and more of those things get into the store, especially the Adobe apps, because those are huge for education.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing we need to clarify in how we're talking about this, and so does Microsoft, by the way, we keep using UWP and store as the same thing, but they're not.
Oh, okay.
Like we keep saying, like even when Microsoft first talked to us about the Centennial Bridge, I remember them saying, this is a tool to help Win32 developers get their apps into the store and then turn them into UWP apps. That's not the pitch anymore, right? The pitch is Desktop Bridge is to get your apps into the store. The
Period.
End.
Right. Yeah.
It's not
so you need to be a UWP app to be in the store, and the store
do not, right?
No. That's the thing. Centennial apps aren't technically UWP apps. Oh, okay. Right. The point.
Would it be fair to say you need to be Centennial or UWP to be in the store?
Well,
not exactly. Because
I know.
There are
there's
also
other
web
app
apps
types.
That can be wrapped.
Right.
What's the web?
Yep.
What was Astoria? What was the web bridge?
So I understand the confusion because UWP is really a it's a technology,
and there are APIs you write to, right?
It's
if you're
equal
a UWP
to the store, yeah, it's okay. The store is where you buy things, and then UWP.
Yeah. So
is
by the way,
a
in
technology.
My own,
I understand that.
My own writing, I do try to use the phrase Windows Store app because
that's
more
a better,
accurate.
That's a better Windows,
but
store
it encompasses
app.
What we think of as like pure UWP apps, right? Mm-hmm. Hybrid UWP apps, which are the Centennial, the Web Bridge.
Westminster, was it? Westminster, Web
Bridge?
That
could be.
I think so.
And then, you know, in the future, I expect, because Microsoft said they would do this, that progressive web apps will also be made available from the store. Now, those will be hybrid UWP apps as well, not technically full, you know, they weren't natively written to the APIs, et cetera.
I think Electron apps can be in the store, right? And I mean, the store is becoming, it used to be store apps were UWP apps. I felt like, maybe I misunderstood it, but now I feel like the store, the definition of the store is expanding to include many app types, including but not limited to UWP.
It's changed over time. You know, in Windows 8, those store apps didn't call it UWP at the time, but they were Metro apps or they were native.
Right.
Windows apps, you know, whatever you want to call it. But that has changed over time. But I think this is Microsoft getting more pragmatic. And in fact, when you look at Build, because we're going to Build next week and you can go back the past 3-4 years, they've made it kind of a new UWP push every year. And this year we have some bridges and this year we're doing this and this year we're improving the bridges. And I think what we found over this time period is that no developers are creating major new apps on UWP, like zero, like literally zero.
I know.
Well, they will
almost
literally
zero.
This wouldn't this be a stimulus to do that? I mean,
no.
Well, no. Because the belief now is that that's never going to happen, right? In other words, let's say you're Apple and you want, for some reason, would they ever do this? No, they would never do this. Apple wants to get Apple Music onto Windows for some reason, right? They have an iTunes client today, which is, I think, where that happens because, like most, well, I don't use it. I don't know. But I assume Apple Music is available in iTunes. But what if they wanted to make a new app, you know? You don't really get a lot of reach when you go full-blown UWP because it's Windows 10 only. If you wrote a desktop app or a web app, you could hit every single Windows user in the world all at once. So you could, with some a lot less difficulty, wrap it in Project Centennial and on Windows 10 make it available through the store. But would you create just a UWP app? No.
No,
and no one does.
No. When Windows Phone failed, the value proposition, I know everybody keeps saying this isn't really why they did it, but it did impact the value proposition.
Makes sense.
If you're Apple and Microsoft's Windows Phone actually succeeded, it would have been a better value, right? Yeah. You'd be like, okay, make a UWP app. It runs on Windows desktops and phones and HoloLens and Xbox. Now, not that many developers care if they run on HoloLens and Xbox, right? Like, it's like, okay, that'd be fun, but
no, that makes sense. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I mean,
so Centennial then will be the technology that most people would
adapt.
That's
my guess. I bet next week we're going to hear a lot about Centennial adults.
I mean, it depends on what you're talking about, right? So existing apps, Spotify is a great example. Spotify wrote a desktop client for Windows because at the time that they were coming out a couple of years ago, that was the way it made sense to reach the majority of Windows users. Okay, fine. Does it make sense for them to rewrite that as a brand new UWP app and try to bring it up to speed with all their other clients? Probably not. Does it make sense to take this thing they've already created and wrap it and make it better on Windows 10? Yeah, that's not that hard. That's a nice step.
Yeah.
Leo, you'll remember this. On Mac OS X, as they were making the leap from classic macOS to macOS 10, they had an interim technology, Cocoa, or
well, there was Rosetta, which was really the, you know, the one where you didn't have to do anything. They discontinued that eventually.
But then they had a thing where you could actually
Carbon is the one you're thinking of, which allows a programmer to write in, you know, kind of something compatible. Cocoa is the final step. Everything
Cocoa is native OS 10.
Cocoa's native. Carbon is a bridge, effectively.
Centennial is Carbon. Not literally, calm down, people. But it's the same.
That's its role.
It's a way you can take a legacy app.
I would disagree only because if people are not going to use UWP, then it's then Centennial is far more than Carbon. Carbon was there only for you to limp along until you rewrote everything in Cocoa.
Well, but
and they eventually phased it out. There's no more Carbon.
So this is just the changing times thing. You know, I think when Apple was making that transition between Mac and Mac OS X, everyone was going to switch. We were dropping the past. In Windows, we are hoping to drop the past being Win32. It's not going to happen anytime soon. And so this is a way to make that bridge. It's literally it's a bridge, the bridge technology. It's a good term. It's a way to bridge the past with the future because you could do without adding support for new UWP technologies. I mean, forget about that. There are certain things you can take advantage of, like the app update infrastructure. Remember, with Windows 10S, one of the nice things is you don't have those little installers running every time you boot up the computer. When you adopt Centennial, you're taking your little stupid installer out of the equation as well because all those updates happen through the store and they're done intelligently. They don't all happen at once when your computer boots up. Because today, you've got all these stupid things vying for the computer's resources as it boots. So, it's kind of a... Raphael's telling me, by the way, that the best term for this is yet another term, which is Apex. Apex is the name of the container.
Yeah, Apex.
Started on Windows Phone. Because all of these things, all of the app types in the store are in Apex containers, I think is the way to think of it. Instead of an EXE, it's an Apex file, I guess.
Okay.
Actually, he's Skyping me in real time, and what the heck, I'll just read it to you. he also mentions that there's almost no incentive to finish crossing the bridge.
Right,
because
that's the difference.
It makes sense to stay on Centennial.
That's the difference between Carbon and Centennial.
Mm-hmm.
Carbon, but Apple is very clear. This is just a lease on life. This isn't a permanent technology.
Well, but as Mary Jo said, I think that's what they meant for it to be originally. In other words, the goal was always to get people on UWP, but they got zero traction on that. So they said, okay, well, we'll throw a bone. We're gonna make these bridges that will bring in these apps from other platforms. Some of those other platforms are Windows platforms, like the Desktop Bridge brings in the classic apps. The goal was they really wanted to get those guys doing native apps. And I think they all just said no. And so, but what I've been hearing is, and Raphael is, kind of confirming it, like Centennial works really, really well. And this is a great literal bridge to, from the past to the future.
Okay, good. But that's important. It's all important because.
Sure.
Yeah.
And
when Windows 10 Cloud was a rumor, we were saying if this thing only runs UWP apps, it's dead in the water. Now, if it can run all Windows Store apps, projects, remember, we weren't sure in the beginning. What about Project Centennial, Desktop Bridge?
Right.
That would put it over the top, I think, for a lot of people, and for a lot of apps. And hopefully on the flip side, will drive adoption of Centennial so that more and more companies or developers will app XIs their apps or whatever.
A new verb is born.
Mm. Contain their apps. I don't know.
All right.
Contain your apps.
What else is there to say here? They demonstrate. Oh, there's a lot to say. Wait a minute. What am I thinking? I mean, all of the tools for education, Intunes for education, Teams for education.
Yeah.
I was really impressed. I thought Teams is a brilliant move. And if there is one thing that puts this ahead of Google Chrome, it's it's Intune for education and Teams for education, because Google does not have a good story in either of those. I mean, Hangouts for students? No, they want Slack.
Yeah.
Right. I do.
And Minecraft. Minecraft 3D. Yeah,
Minecraft
those
big.
Three I, things are going to put more of these in schools than anything else.
Yeah, I like the ability to write software code that creates and modifies like Minecraft worlds is really exciting.
Well, we've had it for truth is we've had it for a while. Microsoft's made
it. Yeah, but they're adding it to the education
product. Putting that in there, and it's you know, any kid 10 to 15, if you say, I told my kid last night, I said, you know, you could write a little program that would mine all night for you and wake up in the morning and you'd see what you got.
Yep.
And that's very attractive. That's exactly what they showed, by the way.
Yeah, and they're going to have that's just I think it's going to energize a certain class of student. Pardon the pun, because there are some people who just are going to gravitate to that kind of thing. I mean, it's really exciting.
Totally, totally. I think that's huge. And they're using Tinker, which is actually funny. Tynker is iOS. In fact, it was on the iPad first, and it's being used to teach Swift. It's actually a very open standard, but it's a very good choice. And then what was the other one besides Tinker? There was Code Academy.
Code Builder. Code Builder, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, and then Scratch, which would be my number one choice because that's actually Smalltalk. That's a great way to teach kids to program. And there's a path from that. I was very excited. I thought this looked really good, and I can see if you're in high school. Teams is going to be a great tool for you. Now they showed four kids talking in a. Is that Skype? That's Teams, right? Is that Link?
So Teams, you know, Microsoft's competitors to Slack, is part of Office 365, right? So any service that's in Office 365, the business plans, is going to be integrated into Teams.
Right.
So Skype for Business is in Office 365.
So that's probably what they were using with Skype.
Planner, you know, like their tool that's kind of like Trello, that's in there. What else is in there? OneNote, direct integration.
So schools love OneNote. A lot of schools
do.
Right. PowerPoint they love. Trello they will love. I don't know if they have a lot of experience with Trello.
Yeah, and then Planner, Microsoft's alternative to Trello. You know, so they're just trying to. They're just saying
that's
too
businessy.
If you have Office 365, you get all these already, so you have them. Yeah.
Yeah,
but I mean, kids live in Skype already. I mean, that's not. You know, Michael, again, to use him as an example, he's going into ninth grade. He's like the sweet spot of this.
Sure.
And his school, by the way, is using iPads right now, which is just moronic.
Yeah, that won't last.
They used to use Chromebooks, and they switched because they got a grant, right? For iPads. Oh, okay. Stupid, stupid, stupid. But anyway, and the high school he's going into is bring your own. You do whatever you want. For him, the way last night he was doing this, they were playing Minecraft together. His friends don't even come over. They're all on Skype playing Minecraft.
Look at kids using Microsoft
kids
products.
Today. They don't even know it's Microsoft products. They have no idea.
Oh, that must be why. You know,
but that's the, I mean, that's why this is genius.
That explains it.
Because it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
The other cool thing they announced with Teams, which I don't think a lot of people, I mean, I think the teachers in the audience understood it, but I don't know if like a lot of non-teachers understood it. They have this thing they do for OneNote now called OneNote. I think it's called OneNote Classroom Experience. So there are all these specific add-ins to OneNote that they make for teachers and students. So if you're a teacher, you can automatically like generate quizzes and grade quizzes and distribute your school rosters and sync the rosters.
Teachers use polls all the time in the classroom for quizzes.
All that's now in Teams and integrated with Intune for education. So Microsoft's like taking all these piece parts they had before and they're like pulling them all together and making something very obvious. Like if you're a teacher or a student, it's like, hey, here's Teams, and we're not going to give you a special version of Teams that's different from the regular Teams, but we're going to give you all these add-ins that are specific to education if you want them. Here they are.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I mean, I know a little bit about this, not because I've ever been a teacher, but because I've been on the board of a high school. I've watched teachers work. I've experienced teacher pushback on technology. Technologically sophisticated teachers, not old people, young people who say, no, I believe in the old teaching of one-on-one. I don't believe in technology. And I see the pushback. And some of the pushback you get is on really not such great tools like Moodle and Black. They used Moodle, but Blackboard, these other. And OneNote is, big improvement. And many of them are already using it.
Yep.
I have to say that I thought this was an extremely compelling story Microsoft was telling. And if Apple, it's aimed at Google. Yeah. Apple used to own this. Apple has no compelling story at all. I mean, they have stuff like this for iPad, but it's not anywhere as significant. Mm-hmm. And I think Google should be shivering in their boots. I was a little bit hoping they'd have a Surface Hub, inexpensive Surface Hub for schools, but they didn't do that.
Well, there is one big question, though, about the Microsoft education thing, and that is the lab scenario. You know, in other words, you have 30 computers in a lab, and students are using them, and they get up and they go, and the next kids are coming in, and you got to blow them away and get them back up and running. And that's actually something Google does really well and very quickly. And I talked to a friend last night, and, you know, he asked me, he said, knowing as much as he knows about Microsoft, he said, let me ask you something. Is this thing that Microsoft introduced actually as good as what Google does, or is it just 29% faster than what Microsoft used to do? You know, and of course, beautiful because that is exactly what it is. And, they were talking about putting a USB key and you plug it in and it takes 5 minutes and you're back up and running. Well, that times 30. And then, yes, I know you could have 6 or 10 of those sticks. And what do you as a harried teacher already is going to, were you going to run around stick USB keys and computers?
Yeah.
Kids are twiddling their thumbs waiting for the class to start. Mm-hmm. We all know how, restless or whatever the kids can be. Mm-hmm. Yikes. You know, so that to me is the one big question here. I think a lot of times, you know, what we've seen so far in the U.S. especially, they kind of go the path of least resistance. And least resistance is cost, too. But it's this kind of stuff. I think the one thing that Google's done really well is the management stuff. And I don't know enough about what Microsoft's doing yet to say that it is worse or whatever. But I wonder. And when he talked about the USB key, I thought, this is not... That's not a good solution.
There's a net boot.
Well, they had the app they showed, set up school PCs. Remember he showed that app?
There's a network solution, I'm sure.
Yeah, there's an app. It's called Set Up School PCs, and that's part of their whole how to manage devices in schools, too.
For a smaller school, though, Paul, maybe they're setting up 30. The idea that you put your build on a USB key, and then the first time that machine's turned on, it says, give me the USB key. And then it's done. I think that's not that's not awful. In a bigger school, we'll have a LAN. and they'll do it over the LAN.
Oh, no, bigger school, you could, Intune is there and, whatever. I get it. But
remember, a lot of schools are not that big or don't have.
Yes.
I mean, if you're paying even $100, if you're paying $189, even if you're paying $189 for one of these, you're not going to have, you're not 400 of them. And if you are, then you'll do it over a network, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But I don't, I'm not an expert on that. That is a big issue, though. A lot of times what happens from technology companies is they dump technologies on schools without making it easy to maintain, easy to use. They don't give the teachers resources. I think we've learned that does not work. So
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting. I thought it was extremely... compelling. And frankly, if you can make a version of, I pitch Chromebooks all the time to people. I say, the default, this is what I say on the radio show, the default for years was you buy a PC because that's what your choice was. And maybe if you were like adventurous, we'll buy a Mac. But you had no choice but to get a general purpose operating system. And if all you're doing is surfing and getting email, that's overly complex. A security nightmare. You don't need, and way too expensive. You don't need that, and you should consider a Chromebook. And for 90% of the population, a Chromebook's perfect. Well, I think you're right, Paul. There's going to be this messaging issue when they try to use Chrome and iTunes. But I have to say, this is really a good alternative to a Chromebook for a lot of people.
Oh no, I
it's more than education.
I absolutely agree. Yes. And by the way, that's been the point all along. Windows 10S and the laptop they introduced are not just for education. Right. It's a part of it, but it's not the central point of it. They have to fight back in some way. I think overall it was great. There was a goofy line in one of the blog posts where it said, we ensured that, you know, Microsoft Edge could run the G Suite tools like Google Apps and Google Docs and Gmail and so forth really, really well, because we know lots of school.
Well, that's important, certainly for a transition, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I think, boy, those tools will start to look very primitive when you put them next to Office. Maybe primitive is not a bad thing. I don't know.
That's the point. So, I mean, it's, you know, this simple, right? I mean, right. Are they simpler? Did they get the job done? Mm-hmm. You know, that's the problem Microsoft faces. I always figured they were going to take those Office mobile apps and improve them to the, you know, whatever 90 percentile thing that most people need, and that would be enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This centennial thing, it's really interesting because obviously that is never going to happen. Here's a little bone for Windows enthusiasts, though. You know, the nice thing about this, well, no, really. I mean, because Office Mobile on iPad, on iPhone, and on Android handsets and tablets is essentially identical to Office Mobile on Windows 10, right? Same apps. To get the full-blown Office, you need a PC or a Mac. I mean, the Office 2016 is on the Mac as well, but this Windows Store thing is obviously Windows only, and so in many ways now, we've come back to this thing. It's not like a strategy change per se, but people have been asking, well, what about Windows first? What about Windows best? Mm-hmm. You could sort of make the argument that the centennial versions of Office are that thing you've been asking for.
That's true. You know? Right. Because they're not going to have those for Mac, obviously. Right? It's Windows.
So. That's it. Yep.
Yep.
How crappy are the $189 ones?
Actually, you know what? If I'm being perfectly honest, and I always am, they were even crappier than I thought they were going to be.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of them were just the PCs you already see, like when you go to Best Buy.
They just put S on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, let's take a break. I want to talk about the laptops. I want to talk about new Surface laptop. There's, this is great. All I can say is I think Microsoft is surprisingly agile. And now we understand a little bit more why that Creators Update dog and pony show was like it was.
Right.
Go ahead. You want to get the UPS guy? Go ahead. Do that. I'll do a little ad.
No, I don't have to.
I'll stop talking. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. I tell you, if you are about to buy or refi, you got to know about Rocket Mortgage. First of all, you probably already have Quicken Loans on your radar. The second largest lender in the country, $92 billion in loans, I think it was last year. But more importantly, you don't care how big they are. You care about how good they are. And look at that. J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards, number one in 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, every year, right through 2016. And they'll get it in 2017, I guarantee you. Mortgage servicing, number one, year after year, 2014, 2015, 2016. That's awesome. And now I think they're going to get number one even, you know, easier because of this new product from Quicken Loans. It's called Rocket Mortgage. And it is a completely online mortgage approval process. And that's what at least I want. I think many of you want. Maybe grandma wants to go into the, you know, she likes to spend time with the loan officer talking to him. I don't know. I just want to get it done fast. Last time we bought a house in 2013... we went to a, you know, traditional mortgage office. Guy, it's so funny. Guy had a clipboard, and it was, you know, maybe 400 fly paper, like the little, not fly paper, the rice paper, little thin, like a telephone book. And he was thumbing. Let me see if I could. Let's see this right here. We get a, you know, is it tied to the LIBOR or I don't? And it was crazy. But okay, fine. We're gonna do this. How long it'll take? We're going on vacation in a month. Oh, no problem. A month later, we're on a cruise ship on vacation, still faxing paperwork. It took him more than a month for mortgage approval, and it was crazy. And now we had to go through all this paperwork. And Lisa was saying, do you have pay stubs from 2012? Do you have any? Rocket Mortgage next time. I guarantee it doesn't take you months, doesn't take you weeks, doesn't take you days, takes you minutes. Plus, you can submit all the paperwork, pay stubs, bank statements, with the touch of a button, and you could do this on your phone or your tablet, so it's very easy. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time, see what the impact is. So you're going to get a loan that's just right for you, and you then get approved in minutes. I mean, like you could be at the open house and decide we ought to apply for a loan right now and have it before you leave. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online. If you're not buying today, just make a post-it note and put it by your computer, quickenloans.com/windows. You'll be glad you did for Rocket Mortgage. quickenloans.com/windows, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Next time you're going on vacation, buy a house before you go. That was kind of nutty. But the nice thing is we came home to a new house, but it was, that was nutty.
Oh, boy.
That was nutty.
That's, yeah.
Brad did this. Brad Sams did this. By the way, you haven't said his name, so I'm gonna say his name. Brad Sams did this, and he says that. Did you see that?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Brad Sams used Rocket Mortgage, and he was very pleased. Anyway, I just wanted an excuse to pop him up. Alex and the company have created a instant Brad Sams. We can just pop right into there. He's even got his own key. I press the B key, and he appears. Is that awesome?
That's going to make him so happy. I'm going to have to ask you to stop doing that.
Well, I saw, you know, we're sitting watching the event, and Panos Panay wades into the audience to show this new Surface laptop to somebody. Immediately picks a woman using a MacBook. I don't think that was an accident, right?
No, yes. That was not.
Everybody else is using something, but she's using a Mac. But then I look and there's Brad Sams right next to her and Paul Theroux right next to him. And you had the goofiest grin on your face.
Huh?
Yeah.
Mary Jo, you mean?
No. I didn't see Mary Jo. Why weren't you sitting next to them?
I was sitting in front of those guys.
Oh, you were. I bet you were one of those kids in school that sits in the front row.
Wow.
No. I was trying to sit next to Paul and Brad, but somebody bogarted me and I couldn't get in the room.
I take it you guys immediately grabbed it away from that woman and played with it.
I talked to her a little bit afterwards. She's a reporter in the education field, which was interesting.
Perfect.
Yeah, and Panos, before the show started, was out scanning the audience.
Like a magician looking for a mark, right?
Yep. And I saw him see her because she was sitting there on her MacBook, like, blah, you know. And I'm like, he's going to do something with her.
That's so funny. So funny. So I immediately ordered one of these because Lisa texted me. She said, I want the burgundy. surprise, surprise, surprise. If you want anything but platinum, they ain't no choices. You have to get the i5 with 8 gigs of RAM and a 256 gig SSD.
That is a weird little thing that they didn't just, they didn't gloss over it. They didn't mention it at all.
No. Is that temporary, you think? That.
I wonder.
I don't actually mind. That's probably how I would have configured it anyway. But
I don't understand paying a lot of money to get a high end version and not having that choice.
Oh yeah. By the way, the $999 version isn't in color either. It's platinum.
I kind of like the platinum ones more than the ones that are color. Yeah.
See, all we can do is see them on the screen. We can't.
Yeah.
Well, the way I would have handled this personally is they should have done a version without Alcantara or whatever it's called as the low-end version. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, the ones you're selling to schools, have you ever seen a student's dorm room?
I mean, like, will be,
I know.
It's going to be like floating in a sea of Pepsi at one point. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to have like a hairy material on it.
I know.
Well, it is plastic, right? I mean, it's not.
Yeah, they made a big deal out of it, though. Like the Alcantara stuff, they're like, it gives you this warm glow under your hands because it's a fabric. And I was thinking, ooh, I don't want fabric on my keyboard.
Oh, you're getting it.
I'm not getting it.
Oh, you're not?
I don't know.
I'm getting it.
I mean, I'd like to try it. I would like to try it out.
I think it's interesting because clearly they had to differentiate, right? And this is the only laptop with a fabric top.
Right. Let's talk about that because I think Paul and I have some different takes on this idea. So if you remember, the Surface team has made a point of repeatedly saying the only reason Microsoft will make new hardware is if we are making a new category, right? Making a new device category. And they said with Surfaces, they and Surface Pros, they were doing a 2-in-1 and showing OEMs how to do a 2-in-1, right? Surface Hub, here's how to do a big screen touch monitor and make it into a full computing system. Surface Studio, here's a special hinge that you could use to make something that's like a drafting table. Yeah. It's an all-in-one, yes, but it's a little different.
Yeah.
What is different about this other than the fuzzy keyboard?
And Windows 10S.
Yeah. Okay.
I think, okay, here's one thing. And when he showed the slide, remember on the screen, there was a clear gap in between the Surface Pro, the Surface Book, and the Surface Studio. There was a hole.
Yeah.
Right.
And this kind of, it's a laptop, for one thing. They don't offer a true laptop, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I feel like a direct shot. This one is less of a shot against Chromebooks and more of a shot at a MacBook, frankly.
Yeah.
The MacBook Air particularly. The Air is probably
Surface
getting discontinued.
Exists for one reason only, and it's called Apple Envy.
Well, in this case, this Apple kick him in the butt. Battery life. A real processor, and it weighs a little more than the MacBook, which is just over 2 pounds. But it's a touch screen, and I know Apple says, "Oh, no one wants a touch screen." That's sounding like famous last words at this point.
There were some weird things about the design. Like, yes, it works with the existing Surface Pen, but it doesn't open up all the way, so it's not really clear what you would do with the pen on this thing.
Oh, really? That's interesting. By the way,
I suspect, I could be wrong, because I think these things are actually layers that can kind of add to the screen, but they're making these screens already for Surface Book, right? It's the same screen.
Yeah. Same screen. Mm. Yeah.
So I think it's just a bonus. Like, hey, it's still, it works. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's crazy that anyone would write on that screen with a pen.
Oh, that's good to know, because it doesn't come with a pen.
I saw people trying, right? Yeah, like, I saw people like holding it from the back and like trying to put the pen on the thing. Like,
what happens? Does it push it over?
I didn't try it, but
so
Panos, you did it, but he was holding it pretty firmly in his hand, and since it doesn't do the 2-in-1,
it toppled over in his hand while he was doing that.
Yeah. So I asked to sit and try it in my lap, because I'm the person who is always saying Surface is not lappable. I can't make it work on my lap. And so it was really funny because I found one of the Microsoft PR people and he's like, I want you to do this because you're famous. Always complaining about this.
Yeah.
So he gets me the burgundy one. He brings me over to a couch. He gets my phone. He's ready for taking the picture of me with it. I put it on my lap and I'm like, it's still a little tippy. And he's looking at me and he's like, it is.
if we could focus for a moment on Mary Jo's face, which I believe is portraying a sense of betrayal, perhaps.
I did.
Have lied to me moment.
I just was sad.
Well, it's more lappable than it was, isn't it?
Yes. Better than the Surface Pro, better than the Surface Book, which completely tips over because it's so top heavy.
Right.
This is still, the center of gravity is just a speck off and it's a little top heavy. It is.
I have to try that. Have you tried that with a MacBook Air? I wonder.
Me?
Or a MacBook? No. Because goodness gracious, heaven for Fenn. Hey, you're using an Android phone, Mary Jo. You're obviously Mac curious.
Being the jerk that I am, I whipped my HP Spectre out of my laptop bag and I put it on my lap and I showed him. I'm like, see, this is like what I wanted.
The Surface Book absolutely does
tip over.
Oh, yeah. It's really got a lot of stuff in the top there. It's a tablet.
Yeah. And you know what? One person said, was this Brad who said this? Somebody said, it's because of the Pixel Sense display. Like, it's the display that's a little heavy. And I'm like, I don't know. Is that why?
You do that one more time, we're going to have to pay him. I mean, on my legs.
Like,
it doesn't. Yeah, I guess not.
I don't know. So
is that a MacBook, Paul, or a MacBook Air?
Yeah.
That's the thin, light MacBook?
No, it's a MacBook Air.
One point I had it like secured with my elbows and I was like holding it down with my elbows. I'm like, yeah, but then I'm like, that's going to get really tiring typing like that.
Well, I think that's what we all have different size legs and upper legs are different lengths.
Mary Jo's got very short legs. Let's be
honest. I don't.
Oh, okay.
I sort of do have short upper legs for some reason, but I can, what you were just describing, you kind of hold the deck down with your wrists as you know, as you're holding, you kind of hold it there.
Yeah, that's what it actually looks like she's doing.
I was
pressing it down.
Right. Oh, there it is. Exactly. That's right.
I was trying to
do.
I don't really do that with my HP though. Like my HP, I can just rest my wrists on it and not like hold it down, you know, like it just kind of put
has
them
on. HP connected with you yet to film the next commercial?
I know, right? It's like, no,
my,
and
my
so
Spectre, by the way, I have the same one as you did, died.
Oh no. Are you kidding?
Yeah, I think the hard drive died. It's says no bootable device. I don't know what happened. I let it die, battery die completely, like for a couple of days. I didn't use it and it was unplugged. I'm thinking, I don't know. I haven't really banged on it, but I tried a little bit to fix it. Couldn't.
Yeah.
So I'm worried. Yeah. I love that. Mm. That's a really nice laptop. But how much was that? $1,800?
All right, but
yeah, it's expensive.
Of course,
expensive.
This one's $1,200, right? Or,
right, and if you get the i7, how much is that?
Yeah, $2,200 it was. I spec'd it. That's crazy. I'm not going to pay $2,200 for this.
No. Yeah.
Well, hold on, hold on. But it's awesome.
Yeah. No, it's nice. It is very nice.
It feels nice. You touched it. Really, it's awesome.
Nice. Oh, it's excellent.
Do you like the Alcantara?
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, it's funny. Of course, the first thing we sort of think about with this device is, you know, Surface has historically always kind of championed a new form factor. You know, this device doesn't do this. It's a laptop. Also, you could make the argument, you know, this is kind of they're clearly going after Apple, but this, if it's successful, is going to harm PC makers. It's a laptop.
Right.
These guys are already making laptops.
Right.
What is the point?
Right, that's back to the point. Like, what are they doing to make a new category here? They're competing with their OEMs and premium laptops to me.
Yeah,
I can explain that.
Go ahead.
if you stop talking about your lap for a second.
Sir?
No. God damn it.
I now have the gong, by the way.
Let's hear it again.
This is when Paul gets out of hand. He gave it to me so I can ring it.
Oh, really? That was your housewarming gift?
Yeah.
How great was that? That's awesome.
Great.
Nice. Oh, that's cute.
It's a nice little gong, I have to say.
Sounds great.
No, I if you go back to the original vision for Surface, you'll remember the phrase they used. It was something like, we want to provide the perfect stage for Windows. And at that time, it was Windows 8. We're going to make Windows into a touch thing. And here's the device that makes that happen. And so part of that, it was a new kind of device. It was a 2-in-1. It had a touch screen and had a pen compatible screen. You know, this device does this, but for Windows 10S, it's really the same kind of thing. In other words, this is the proof in what I was saying a couple of months ago, that Windows 10 Cloud or Windows 10S, as we're now calling it, is not just for Chromebook competitors. It's not just for low-end computers. It's also going to be for premium devices. And this thing actually today stands alone. You know, you asked me, how were those other devices? Well, they were terrible. They're all junky little thick-looking pieces of junk that cost $200. This thing cost $1,000 and up. I'd say, realistically, it cost $1,200 and up, because I don't know why anyone would buy a 4-gigabit computer today. But it's an expensive premium device. And I think this is their Chromebook Pixel. You know, what they're trying to do is make this aspirational, you know, for customers, but also for PC makers. And that if this thing is successful, what we will see is PC makers doing what they did with Surface Pro, copy it and make premium Windows 10S computers. Mm-hmm. I think it's the same thing.
Hmm. I also am a little bit more bullish than you on 10S. I feel like, I just wish there were a SKU of 650.
Yes, right. And by the way, there's nothing stopping companies from doing this. I'm a little confused, actually, that there isn't that kind of a thing. Why wasn't there a Dell or an HP or a Lenovo, whatever? Actually, Lenovo wasn't part of this at all, by the way, which is kind of interesting, too. There are problems with this. I mean, I think that, you know, and I think I might write this up. There is a case to be made that the way the world is going in the premium space and the PC market, that this thing is actually kind of a thick laptop and not a thin ultrabook, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have a transforming screen in any way. It doesn't even come back all the way around. Like, why wouldn't they at least do that?
It's pretty, devices, it is thin. It's not really thick, right?
But if you compare it to, you know, a MacBook, if you compare it to an HP Spectre X360 that's brand new, it's thicker. It doesn't transform like the HP does. It's got bigger bezels. It's heavier. You know, I mean, it's meant to be
more durable, you know,
maybe. I mean, but it's a premium computer. You know, I'm just saying these things by nature do compete. So anyway, I'm gonna think through some of that stuff. I like you. I think we got out of there and we all kind of collectively scratched our heads a little bit at the rationale behind this. Like, how do they justify this? And there's some irony or maybe hypocrisy to this, because for years I've been saying nobody asked for a detachable laptop. They wanted what they wanted was an Ultrabook. They wanted a clamshell form factor.
Yeah.
This is the machine that users were actually asking for. And
it's an Ultrabook, right? It is an Ultrabook.
No, it's not. It's actually really – it's pretty thick.
You think that's interesting.
They talk about the thickness at the thinnest point at the front, but actually at the back it's considerably thicker. Look at a picture of it from the side. It's pretty thick.
Interesting.
I am very happy they made a clamshell laptop. I think the 2-in-1 form factor – I know – there are numbers showing how much people love them. I'm not in that fan club. And I know they did a lot of research about university students and what kind of form factor they wanted. And clamshell laptops are really popular with them. They're really good for using in a school setting, especially if they're lappable. They're really great. So
you know what though? I feel like the one thing that Microsoft did get right with the Surface Book, but any transformable, whatever, however it transforms, gets this right in some way, is that I think most of people's usage is in that clamshell usage. But it's sort of like touch. You know, every once in a while, you know, having that ability to transform it in some ways is actually useful. For example, like the screen on this can't lay flat.
Right.
Right. So if you're in a crowded plane and you want to watch a movie, you don't have a way to rotate that thing back around.
Yeah.
Or stand it up on itself, and it's just a laptop. You're stuck. There's nothing you can do.
You're saying this is thicker than an Ultrabook?
It's thicker than the HP Spectre by a bit. Like when I held them side by side, I'm like,
Well, Ultrabook and the S7 before it, Acer, are really skinny. Yeah. Really, kind of pronouncedly thin. Mm-hmm. An Ultrabook to me is like a MacBook Air. Is this... This is similar to a MacBook Air in its wedge shape, right, Paul? I mean,
I believe it's thicker. It's 14.5 millimeters at its thickest.
Okay, that might be a little thicker. Yeah, I think it's 10 and a half. Well, no, 10, you know, 10 or 11 is the MacBook.
Okay, well, an HP Spectre X360, which is a transforming PC, meaning that the hinge allows the screen to go all the way back around onto itself, is thinner than this.
See, I think the 2-in-1 might really be the sweet spot for PCs.
Yeah. By the way, it's been the sweet spot for Surface so far. You know, Surface Pro.
Well, they don't make a 2-in-1 Surface.
Well, the tablet type 2-in-1. I'm sorry, the detachable.
But see, the 2-in-1 gives you a clamshell.
Right. That also well, that's what I'm saying. In other words, I'm surprised this doesn't flip back around.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. But maybe like that Alcantara couldn't take the exposure.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want your Alcantara on the bottom?
No. Hell no. Which one is it? No, which one is it that retracts the keys when you flip it around?
One of the ThinkPads does that. The Yoga X1.
Yoga.
Yeah.
I think X1 that's Yoga. Sweet.
Yeah, it's an interesting
idea. If I were a student, that's the one I would probably get.
Yeah, I talked to someone. I don't think it was from Lenovo, but I can't remember who. I talked to someone from a PC maker about that, and I said, it's really interesting it does that. It seems like it's a unnecessary complexity. That's not really an issue, and whoever was said, oh no, that's a serious issue. Actually, we have that problem all the time. The keys get caught on stuff, and it actually is a problem.
Even if it's not a problem, it's a perceived problem by consumers. Yeah. I think.
No, I guess it is a problem. I was told it was a problem. So I've never experienced it, but then I don't do that a lot either. But so I don't, you know, I'm gonna.
We didn't talk about USB-C, should we?
Oh, I'm mad about that. I mean,
I have a theory about this.
I have plenty of Surface connectors, so it's not the end of the world. I even have the Surface dock, and I'll be using that. But why not Type C? Come on. I'm glad they have Type A. They should have one Type A and one Type C.
Because in my new role as Microsoft apologist, allow me to explain it to you unwashed masses.
Okay,
no.
Do it.
No, I'm kidding. You know, Microsoft said the reason was that nobody was asking for that, and I am going to call BS on that. That's crazy. The other thing is they stood up on a stage and said, this thing's going to be future proof for 4 years, or it's going to last for four years. I'm sorry, but you gotta have USB-C on something that's gonna be around 4 years. I mean, add the port. You know, you can still do your goofy service connect if you have to. But I think the reason was, seriously, that Microsoft understands this compete issue. They know that their PC makers were really upset with them for Surface, right? And that they're just getting over it. And now they're doing a laptop. And I think what they're saying here is, guys, you're going to copy this. You can put USB-C on it. You know, we're going to hold off on this. Mm. It also gives them that business compatibility thing we talked about earlier, where companies can deploy this stuff and all their peripherals are still going to work. This will work with a Surface dock. It will work with any Surface power supply, right? Because they all use the same connector. So,
how many of the people buying the Surface laptop have a Surface dock or any other Surface devices? Yep.
It's not people. It's businesses.
School. Yeah, businesses.
Type
right?
C is just the future. It's just whatever.
No, you're right. You are absolutely right. It's a strange omission. I was saying to Mary Jo, you know, one of the tricks here is, I've been traveling with USB-C devices, and so I have all these little peripherals for USB-C. So if I go out tomorrow and I go on my trip and I don't have this device, but if I had it, or if I bring a Surface Book, I have to remember to switch all that stuff out for the old style USB, right? I mean, I know that's a goofy Paul problem. That's not like the whole world, but that's the little compatibility issue that you run into. You have to have the stuff for your device.
By the way, a few people have pointed this out. In Microsoft's promotional materials, they, if you look really closely at the Surface laptop in there, it has two USB-C connectors in that laptop.
But not in the actual product.
But not in the real one. So that makes me think that maybe in a future iteration, we could see Surface Laptop 2 at some point with USB-C.
Yeah. No, I mean, the next version of all the devices should have a USB-C port. They should do it like HP does it. HP has an EliteBook X360 that just came out. It's for businesses, so they retain the old barrel-style power adapter. But they also have USB-C. And for businesses that want to share all the power adapters and the, you know, whatever connectors they have, they all work. But if you have a USB-C power adapter, that will work. By the way, here's another thought. Microsoft went first to market with Skylake and got burned horribly, right?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they don't want to be on the leading edge of anything anymore. And I know you could argue they're not. No one's on the leading edge of USB-C, except for one thing. Devices are getting ruined by bad power supplies right now. Could you imagine if stories start appearing of Microsoft's new Surface device failing because someone plugged it into a wall and the power adapter went haywire, right? I mean, you can kind of, you can make some pretty good excuses for why they didn't do it.
Sucks. I know.
To me, it's not a huge.
But there's plenty of room for a port. You know, that's it's goofy.
And they make money on proprietary power adapters. And I feel like that people are going to assume that that's why they didn't do it.
It's their next billion-dollar business, Leo.
I kept saying, maybe they have. Yeah. What if they have like a stockpile of parts and they're trying to get rid of them?
Maybe. Right?
Well, this is what happened with the Surface Studio, though. It felt like they were like a generation old.
I know. That makes no sense either.
But it's something in structural. I would bet you in Microsoft's design process, they're not moving quite as fast for whatever reason. It could very well be they're just paranoid, as you say, Paul, and they don't want to be. They put a Kaby Lake in this.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I know. Yep.
I mean, if you're a Mac I got to also say, if you're a Mac person looking at a MacBook, this is you could get a Kaby Lake, not one of them lame old M processors. Mm. You can get an i7 if you want.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I do think it's really important that they said free upgrade to Windows 10 Pro, because anybody going to pay $1,299 for a laptop isn't going to stick with Windows 10S for
This makes it frictionless, you know, for any consumer that wants to buy this thing.
Well, I bought it. I ordered the burgundy kind of, and I do feel like we never did say why you think they only have the colors in that one SKU, but I do think that that's kind of the sweet spot SKU.
Yeah, that's i5. What they're trying to get people to buy.
Yeah. 8 gigs.
You remember when type covers came out and they started coming out in colors? Like purple cost more than other colors, and I don't know. Maybe that's just
there's a reason.
Yeah, some little weird reason like that. Yeah.
There's a new Surface Arc mouse.
Mouse, yep.
As well. And I don't think it's funny. I think it comes in three colors, not four. I'm not sure which three, but I assume it's the nice, you know, the colors like the burgundy and the magenta or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or what's the other color? Not magenta.
Blue. Cobalt blue.
Oh, cobalt blue. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Surface laptop starts shipping here in the U.S. and some other countries, too, I think, June 15th.
20 countries.
20 countries.
Yeah, by the way, global rollout, which is awesome.
Yes. They have never done that for Surface, ever. Every Surface release has been on some kind of a slow boil for the rest of the world. And so, actually, regardless of how you feel about this device, you should at least celebrate that.
Yeah.
That something has happened. And maybe this is tied to those color things, right? You could almost imagine them 6 months down the road when things catch up, they can say, okay, now we're going to offer these other colors and the higher end SKUs as well.
Yeah. Right.
So neither one of you, you'll get review units, right?
Hopefully.
I mean,
after my photo op this week, I feel I may be at the bottom of the review list.
Mary Jo's already written her review.
I really want to try it because I did want Microsoft to make a clamshell laptop, and I'm going to totally give it the benefit of the doubt and try to see if I can make it work on
now,
the lap.
I saw this mouse and I thought, oh, that's the mouse they already announced, the folding mouse. No. But this is a new version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they did announce that. I mean, this is like that other mouse, right? Or am I nuts?
Yes.
Well, it's a new version of it, right? Okay. So it doesn't have that kind of ribbed. You flattened it, right, Mary Jo?
Yep.
I think you did. Yeah.
It's still
folded. Yeah, it still lays flat, so you can put it in the bag. It's nice.
Do gestures on it too.
Oh.
Yeah, the old version was like a lobster back; like it would make a cracking sound every time you, which I always found vaguely.
Like
yeah, no, I didn't like it. It's like, I felt like I was killing an animal. You know.
Battery life, we won't know until we get it, but that seems like top in class battery life. I think.
Yeah. The battery—they're quoting 14. And a half hours, right?
Yeah. So usually it comes in around two-thirds of that. But of the devices I have tested, the best one I've seen this year is the Surface Book with Performance Base. And I'm going to do this off the top of my head. I don't remember exactly. But I think it was in the 11-hour range, which is actually really good. So if this thing is in that ballpark, I mean, this thing, it one of the big features of it is it's a humongous battery in it. And so it's probably not quite as good as that. But that seems good based on how their number and then the real number kind of work out usually.
Yeah.
Three quarters.
And it's because you're stuck with Edge. That helps your battery life, actually.
Stuck with Edge.
No Chrome, so that helps.
That's true.
Just stuck with Edge.
You know, I also want to, I am actually really, really interested to try this. You're running it as Windows 10 S. I want to see, because I always think I could use a Chromebook in my day-to-day job easily because I don't use a lot of heavy-duty apps. I think this would be a good PC for me if it's lappable. I do think so.
Are you not interested in a 2-in-1? I mean, is that...
No. You know what? When I had the Surface RT and then I also used a Surface Pro Loaner, I never took the keyboard off that thing, ever.
Well, that's why, to me, the Yoga is interesting because I don't want to take the keyboard off. But like when I'm sitting and watching TV, for instance.
Yeah, sometimes.
There are times.
I never do. I leave it connected all the time because I always want to type something.
Well, that's exactly. But see, that's my point is that this is kind of, I never take the screen off of my Surface Book.
Yeah.
But when I had, I've never had a Windows 2-in-1, I don't think. But when I had the Chromebook 2-in-1, it wasn't unusual for me, it's often when I'm watching TV, to flip it over. Because then I'm using a touch app of some kind, playing a game. Like I'm playing Words with Friends. And it's just natural to do it that way. Because there's no keyboarding involved.
Sure.
I don't know. I just, I'll be honest. We bought this for review. And Lisa's very interested because I convinced her to go Apple when we first started working together. Before we were even dating, when she first started working here, we were all Mac. And she said, no, I'm Windows. I'm in the business office. I need Excel. And I said, well, you try Excel on them. And eventually got her over on the Mac side, which I'm deeply regretting at this point because she, she's excited about getting a Windows laptop again.
Yeah.
Well, I don't blame her. I don't blame her. Apple, I'm sorry. It really feels like Apple has started to leave the computing business behind. It doesn't really care about
computers. The other way I would say it is that the computing business has left Apple behind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either way is fine with me.
Yeah. They're pointing out that if I am willing to detach the screen on my Surface Book and then reattach it backwards and then flip it down.
Yep, that's true.
I can do that. Way too much work. And this thing weighs a lot.
You want it to transform. You don't want to have to pull it apart.
And you, tenting it on a plane?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's a really good use. I guess I could tent this. Yeah, I can tent it. But I don't know. Actually,
yeah, but you know what?
That's pretty.
You know what that doesn't have?
What?
Alcantara.
Alcantara. You have to say it right, Paul.
How many Alcantaras had to die so Microsoft could release this freaking laptop?
It's like 60% polyester, 30% polyurethane,
and 100% magic.
I do think it feels nice. I like Alcantara.
I do too. I like it a lot. Actually, it's kind of goofy.
Doesn't
I don't
feel
know
like
how it's going to last.
Well, it feels because it's feels plastic. Neat. I think it might last a while. I don't know.
I'm curious what the washing routine is like. Do you have to do like a shampoo and a conditioner?
Well, yeah, is it going to wear? You know how fabric sometimes gets threadbare? Is it going to where my wrists are? Is it going to get threadbare?
What if you tear it? You know, it's basically applied onto the surface of the machine, right? So it's possible you could, with a strong enough something, you know, rip it. Or
and
whatever.
Then there's speakers underneath it. I don't know. How do the speakers sound? I mean, do they sound horrible?
We couldn't hear anything in there. But I honestly, they're not doing anything too different from other PC makers. You know, Apple's got a similar system where the speaker hole is actually far away from the speaker and they kind of channel it under the keys. And it's probably okay. You know, you run into limitations in those.
Devices, I've had speakers with fabric on them for years. It's called a speaker grill, as Ed Bott pointed out. Those are usually pretty thin. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to you through fabric right now on my pop filter. Mm-hmm. If I take it off, hear how crystal clear and I sound, and I put it back, it's really muffling. My voice gets a little more robotic without it. And like by the way, the peas really pop. All right. Now that I put it in tent mode, I don't know what to do. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to have to go to a break so Leah can figure out how to.
What does this do? This actually is kind of cool.
Did you put it in tablet mode?
I should, shouldn't I?
No, don't ever do that. No. It's terrible.
I did that once on the Surface Studio and never again.
Yeah, that's usually what happens.
You're it's a desktop computer. You don't need to do it.
What happened to this thing? Yeah.
Tablet mode. All right, let's try it. Nothing changed. All right. Anything else to say? Color, lappable, most. Wait a minute. Who said this? Surface laptop is the most important Surface device ever?
Yeah, let's gong that. Hold on.
Do it. Do it one more time. Just because I love that sound.
That deserves this.
Whenever you gong, Brad shows up, by the way. I just want you to know.
Is there a way to show the gong?
Yep. Let's see it. Can you hold it up?
Yes, I can. I can, in fact.
Oh, Paul, you went all out. This is like something from...
This got is this, like a special...
Wow, that's beautiful.
It has like its own frame. It has a special ringer that can hang on the frame.
Oh, look at that.
This is like the longest running non-joke in the history of this show because I bought it, and I think in March. You know, it was a long time ago.
It was.
And then but I had it shipped here like an idiot. And then... It was a lot of travel. I came to New York one time and
did you drag it to the event?
Yeah,
you brought it to Rattle and Hum.
I carried it like an idiot. I was like,
that's hysterical. That's so cute.
This is your problem now.
No, that's adorable, Paul. It was. That's so sweet. Aww.
It's mostly lazy. I should have
No, don't. See, he's so self-deprecating. Somebody in the chat room said it should be Hold On Eeyore Gong. It should be called the Hold On Eeyore Gong. I like
Hold On.
Hold On Eeyore. I
I could just say, wrong again, monkey boy.
So, Surface laptop, the most important Surface device ever.
Here's why.
You said that, Paul.
I know. It sounds ridiculous. Give it a second. Hold on. Let it seep in a little bit. It will get better.
It's seeping, all right.
See, it's seeping. In fact, seeping is the problem. I think back when we first heard about Windows 10 Cloud at the time, and now Windows 10S, I really believe that this is the future of Windows. And Microsoft is, I think they even said it on stage. They basically see this as the direction for this OS. I mean, we're in a transition period really early. It's not making sense today. I completely agree with that. But they really need to get it to that point. And this thing, as the flagship device, is designed to show people that it's not this goofy little $200 stripped-down netbook. Yeah. It's not a Surface RT device that will never be upgraded to anything, that's never going forward. Not only does this thing have a future, but it's the core of the platform. It is the soul, as Terry Myerson said, of the platform. It is the future. And Surface laptop, to me, is that bridge between the past and the future. It's the proof point for what Microsoft has been trying to show us with Windows. And so I don't think that the Surface business is ever going to catapult Microsoft into the top five PC makers or anything like this. But I think there's a really good chance that this will be their best-selling device.
Wow.
That this thing will outsell Surface Pro.
He might be right. I could see that. And you might be wrong.
I just thought as a Me Too laptop that they kind of had to do because they wanted to, like you said, prove that Windows 10S isn't just a stripped-down version of Windows. But I don't think the form factor is all that interesting or...
The price is a deterrent.
Could you gong yourself, please?
Hey, I'm just telling you what I thought. No, I'm not gonging myself.
You say tomato. I say most important Surface device ever.
I know.
Wow, really interesting. I do think, now would this, okay, tell me if this would be good for Microsoft or not. I do think people, including a lot of Mac people, might look at it and say, huh, interesting. All right, but before I pull the trigger, $1,299.
Yep.
Let me go see another Windows device, and then get to maybe the ThinkPad X1 Yoga, and say, "Oh, that's even better," and buy it. Would that be a win for Microsoft?
Yeah, I mean, look, anything that helps the ecosystem is a win, right?
Right.
I mean,
okay,
but,
that's what I'm.
But
thinking.
I also think there's a win to be had down the road. And remember, I kept saying, you know, look at the end of the year because we're going to see how different things go. What I want to see is an HP X360. Spectre X360 that uses this system. I want to see a ThinkPad. We didn't see Lenovo at all at this event, by the way. They weren't part of it.
Right.
How about a ThinkPad X1 Carbon running Windows 10S?
Right.
You know, we have to make this leap. You know, we compared it to Mac OS X earlier in the show. They had a very rigid plan about how they were going to get there. Microsoft did too, by the way, but it's not working out. So, you know, UWP hasn't taken off in any meaningful way, and they're trying different things. You know, this is it's a bigger user base. These are people that hold on to their computers for a much longer period of time. There's a lot of tradition here. It's hard to, you know, move things forward. And so they're trying. I mean, it's not going to happen this year. You know, there's no doubt about it. We're not all jumping on UWP and running on, you know, Windows 10S. It's not going to happen. But long term, this kind of has to happen, right? I mean, at some point, we're going to have to say goodbye to the past.
Yeah.
The future is UWP?
No, yeah. Well, the future.
I'm
well,
sorry, Windows Store?
Sorry, I'm not sure.
I wasn't talking to you. Amazon Echo decided to weigh in.
I agree this is the future, but I think the fact of selling this as a reality now is a little too soon.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, but someone has to take the first step.
Right. I mean, Microsoft's playing the long game. They're not, I mean, they don't, they plan to be here for a while. They're not a startup. And by the way, I don't see Windows 10S, frankly, as being. I mean, that person I was talking about would quickly put Windows 10 Pro probably on it. I would think.
Yeah. Oh,
right,
yeah.
That's going to be super interesting to see who keeps S. Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's by the way. Of course, Microsoft is going to get a lot of information from that.
Mm. 6 months from now, if those Adobe apps are in the store, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chrome. I mean, we might as well, since we're wishing on a star. You know, Chrome, iTunes, whatever. If any of that stuff happens, you know, that's the type of little snowball effect you kind of need to make this viable, right? Mm-hmm. Because right now, if I could get Chrome on that thing, I would do it. I think that'd be enough. Yeah. I mean, I do have a couple of little desktop-y type things I use. And actually, on my desktop PC, I use virtualization. I don't do a lot of that on laptops. But I'd love to have a simpler, cleaner, faster, computer. I mean, like, who wouldn't?
Yeah.
But all the tools I use have to be there. So for now, I put up with battery-sucking Chrome, and I don't use iTunes. But, yeah, I mean, I use some desktop apps.
Yeah.
It's a brave new world, my friends. Office apps coming to Windows Education. We talked about that, right?
We already did all that. Yeah, we did that.
Yeah, so let's talk about earnings.
Yeah. Yeah, because this is kind of related to
this
our
was last
discussion.
Week. This came out, and I was reading a couple of articles. One, how clearly cloud was important, not just to Microsoft but to Alphabet. And to Amazon, all three companies showing big growth in the cloud, which means Satya Nadella kind of picked the right pony to bet on.
Well,
on the other hand, Surface, not so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but something happened, right? The one thing the one thing I'll say is...
Are you waiting for me to gong you again?
I was sort of going through my head if it was okay to say this. I mean, Microsoft always intended to have an April event. And that April event was going to be Surface. It was going to be Windows Creators Update. It was going to be whatever it was going to be. And it kind of morphed into this May event for EDU.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that got lost in the transition there was that spring Surface thing, that revision that Chris Cappicella was telling us about, right? And I know someone who has seen a Surface Pro revision, whatever they're going to call it. He called it Surface Pro 5, but you can think of it as a Surface Pro 4.5 if you want it. Yeah. Kind of a mild update. I still think that's going to happen sometime soon. But I think whatever happened, whatever caused those delays, was basically it triggered kind of a one quarter lapse on Microsoft's part. And I think that the shortfall we saw in that quarter, just like Apple's iPhone. Shortfall is essentially from not shipping a new device in a timely fashion. In the iPhone's case, they're shipping a three-year-old design, but in Microsoft's case, they're literally shipping a product that's been in the market for 18 months. Mm-hmm. And I think they've hit the limit of how far that can go for them before they start losing sales. So I think they just miscalculated by a quarter.
Yeah, that could be. The part that struck me about their earnings, where they so their earnings were really good. The only thing that dinged them basically was Surface, right? I mean, Surface was down 26% compared to the year ago quarter. Okay. And like you said, they didn't ship any new Surfaces in April or for months, right? So the part that struck me about the earnings was Microsoft admitted that they were surprised by how tough the OEM competition was to the Surfaces. I think when they came out with Surface and they were encouraging OEMs to copy the designs that they were making and saying, come on, let's all boost the PC ecosystem together. I think they didn't realize, like the OEMs were like, okay, let's. And they came out with really competitively priced devices that actually beat the Surface in many wins.
And by the way, they all have USB-C. I mean, they're all a lot more sophisticated. Most of them are a lot less expensive.
Yep. So that was what struck me about the earnings report more than anything. It wasn't that, Surface earnings were down because Microsoft didn't ship new Surfaces. It was Surface earnings were down because OEMs were making really nice products that people were buying instead of Surfaces.
Yeah. Although
that was interesting.
I mean, to put it in perspective, Microsoft's a company that earns over $20 billion in revenues a quarter. Yeah. Surface was a $1 billion business, is now an $800 million business.
It's still pretty.
It's not a couple hundred million. What's $100 million between friends? It's just. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, but that also leads to my previous question. Even if Surface doesn't do well, it's a success if it drove Windows business.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, right. I mean, Windows outperformed the market. They've seen a move toward premium SKUs, which makes sense, meaning Pro. Because there's more licensing dollars to be had there. And so even though the PC market was either flat or up 1%, depending on who you listen to, I don't remember the exact numbers, but across OEM, across businesses and so forth, Windows was up, year over year. And by single digit, but it was still up. And that's something they've actually been able to do a lot. So yeah, I mean, it works. It's worked well for everybody, right?
Yeah.
PC makers are doing better, especially HP surged in the quarter. And Windows
Which shows you, by the way, that people understand quality.
Yes.
And HP, which made kind of not great computers for a long time, totally turned around. Both Mary Jo and I love our HPs. And people got it. I'm actually kind of encouraged that the market's smart enough to notice.
Yeah. And HP regained the number one position for PC makers in the world that quarter. You know, it's nice to see something being rewarded for doing a good job. It doesn't always happen. You know.
All right. So, okay, good. You've justified it. you've justified your belief in Microsoft Surface, even though.
I testified it.
Testified. So what else? What give us the rundown, the lowdown on the earnings. Anything else?
I thought Office 365 revenues and seats were interesting. They are now over 100 million seats of Office 365 business and over 26 million for home and consumer. So Office 365 selling as a subscription is doing well for them, although slowing a bit. Like, I think it was last consecutive quarter, it was 96 million seats. Now it's over 100 million. But it's consumer. Still good enough they're giving a number, right?
They measure these a little differently. You know, business is measured on monthly active users, but that makes sense because businesses can add and remove licenses on the fly. Consumers are typically, you can go monthly, but they're typically annual subscription costs. And so it's a, it's kind of, it's almost like a retail sale. You basically pay, you know, you buy the subscription, it gets logged. Obviously the cloud stuff is going gangbusters. Like you said, Azure is still on the upward swing. It's huge. A server does surprisingly well. That always kills me.
Not surprising.
Yeah, not surprising that it kills me.
Not surprising it kills you, but it's not surprising to me it's doing well because people still need on-premises hardware.
You know, Xbox is an interesting exercise in how can we word things to make it not seem terrible. Which I always feel bad for. But, you know, you can always tell by the way they cherry pick their terms, like how something is doing. And, you know, Xbox, it's like Xbox Live revenue growth offset hardware revenue decline. You know, that's like, okay. You know, monthly users on Xbox Live grew 13%, largely because of Windows 10. Xbox software and services revenue grew 7%. Microsoft, as I wrote, sold some number of Xbox consoles, but they'll never tell us that. But there was a separate report. Actually, I've got this later in the notes, but basically Sony had just announced that they had sold 60 million PlayStation 4s. Microsoft last announced an Xbox number about 17 and a half years ago. But according to one report, they've sold about 33 million Xbox Ones. And actually, it's still 2-1, obviously, but it's over 30 million at this point. If you do kind of a comparison to where the Xbox 360 was at this point in its life cycle and where they eventually arrived, ditto for the PlayStation 3, I actually think the Xbox One is ahead, still ahead of where the Xbox 360 was at that time. That doesn't generate into more money because they don't make money on Xbox, but it's, you know, not a complete disaster. I don't know.
Who knows?
They nicked the iceberg. I don't know what to say.
Well, we don't have a new Windows number either, by the way. We don't have a new Windows 10 number still since last year,
which
400 million.
Crazy. So now we look at build and
build must be where they're going to do this. They
make the argument because you're right. You're talking to developers. Here's the market you're targeting. By the way, if they don't say something at build,
it's a little concerning if they don't.
It's already a little concerning. We'll see what happens.
All right. Everything.
Oh, and
everything.
Windows Phone. Should we mention Windows Phone?
Well, did they sell any of those?
We effectively have no revenue left in the phone segment.
Zero?
Hold on. I can spin that into positive news, too. You know, 2 years ago, they started winding down their Windows Phone business, meaning their Nokia hardware assets. And they had a 2-year plan that by the time 2 years was over, they would have zero revenue. And they did it a quarter ahead of schedule, Leo. So, you know.
That's just the line.
They beat their schedule. Nice job.
They're not losing all that money anymore. That's a silver lining.
They're not losing any money. They're not making any money. It's perfect. Yeah. It's a perfect synergy.
There you go.
Wow. Yeah. So,
although Nadella did give some interviews this week where he stirred the pot again and said, yeah, we're going to make phones someday.
Hold on. First of all, he didn't actually say that. He was misquoted. He was misquoted somewhat. You got to go listen to the podcast, which no one's going to do. But the guy from Alex Kipman was also interviewed, by the way, and he said phone's dead. There's no phone.
Right. Because he keeps saying HoloLens is a successor to phone, right?
He literally did say that, yes. I found that to make him look slightly insane. But I'm just – he is in the hardware part.
Successor in what –
They're saying
and it will be the next thing that Microsoft fails at.
No, they're saying people won't use phones in the near term, that they'll actually wear glasses instead and use that to be your interface.
We have got iPhone right where we want them.
Yeah.
Declining to 50 million units a quarter.
Well, but, you know, in similar, you know, as we've said, I think Apple's abandoning the computer market. Maybe that's where Microsoft belongs.
Abandoning?
No, in the computer market.
Oh, in the computer market. They clearly have seen their greatest success in the computer market.
So there you go.
Yep. Yeah, play to your strengths.
Play to your strengths. Yes. And that way you're not competing head-to-head anymore.
I was interested this week to see some, maybe it was Vox and or maybe it was in Bloomberg too, but basically this kind of acknowledgement that, you know, Microsoft is this company who, you know, in many ways has infinite resources, and they just keep plowing away at this consumer thing as if they're ever going to see success doing this.
Right.
But they're really not actually successful with consumers. And when you could make the argument that they were, it was really just kind of a halo effect thing that people were buying PCs for home because that was the only way really to get computing resources, and the software is compatible with the way they had at work.
You're echoing what I had just said, right?
Then I retract what I just said. What I meant was,
that's exactly right, and that's
So when that halo effect goes away, and people move to other types of devices, phones mostly, but tablets a little bit, Chromebooks a little bit, you know, the PC becomes less important, and of course that hurts Microsoft. But it's funny how they keep pushing at these other things. They keep trying again and again, then they walk away. And I just a little nervous about supporting Microsoft in certain areas because I don't really see the resolve. And I see plenty of evidence of them abandoning things after a couple of years of failures. You know,
That's the modern thing: is you try things and you fail fast, so that you don't lose too much money pursuing something. But then you learn something.
Okay, but I don't see. I don't care if Microsoft learns anything. What I care about are the people who, unfortunately, just threw several $100 at something and then did it again and then did it again and got screwed over each time. Like it's a little tough to watch that happen.
Fair enough.
And then to watch them make the same mistakes over and over again, and you try to explain to them why this is maybe not such a great idea, and because then I'm the jerk because
you're the jerk. my tent went to sleep. Wake up, tent.
Tent, wake up.
Where's the start button? Are you using the Amazon tent? You're going to run out, Paul, and buy that Amazon look? Hello, I'm talking. Hello. Look at my fashion.
No, I never want to look at myself. And what I really don't want is to be judged on the way I look.
Okay, it's making sure it's me.
Mm-hmm. How's it doing?
Not doing it good. Oh, wait a minute. The camera's down there.
Right. Plus, you have to stand on your head, Leo, because it's upside down.
I do, because I think it's upside down.
Oops.
That's amazing.
Oh, my God.
Did it work?
Okay. It worked once I turned it around. All right. We haven't talked about Redstone.
We haven't.
My people is back. Bring my people back. And they did.
They did.
Thank you, Microsoft.
My people was a feature that was supposed to be in Creators Update. And last October, I believe, Microsoft said, no, it was January, I think, this year. They said, you know what? It's not going to make it into Creators Update. Right. It just came out in the latest Windows 10 build for PCs, which was 16184 last week. And so My People is this thing that lets you pin people. I think it's limited to 3 in the test build to your taskbar so that you can do things with those people, like share apps, look at things together, people who you want to just communicate with frequently. And they're more accessible because they're right on your taskbar. Handy.
Handy.
Yeah.
Yeah. it's not very good. Actually, but the bigger
problem
here is...
Did you try it out?
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. Actually, you were the fourth person, so you didn't get onto the taskbar. But yeah, you got to go into the menu to get to Mary Jo, which is like an additional step. But
right, you're not going to do that.
I'm sure they'll fix that part of it, whatever. I've always kind of like the people-centric thing. I will say this, you know, whether it's Windows 8 or Windows 10, start screen, start menu, whatever, they've been doing this live tile thing. And I don't think that makes sense on an interface you're not staring at all day long. You know, with a phone, you can kind of bring it up and look at it and stuff is updating, and that's kind of cool. But on a PC, you tend to, you know, focus on an application. You're working on something. And the only alternative is to deal with notifications, which I think most people would agree are really annoying. And I don't open the start menu. You press the start button. Look at it? And then you go back to what you're doing. Like, I don't think that makes sense. And I feel like this feature is a reaction to that, because it's starting in Windows 8. You could already pin contacts to the start menu or start screen. Right. And you could click on that contact. And you're basically presented with a similar, if not as pretty, list of things you can do with that person, right? Call them on Skype or send them a message or whatever.
Yeah.
So to me, this is almost like their final... I think this is the first step in them scaling back from a UI that might have made some sense on mobile, although that was never really very popular. But people clearly like it. And you move it to the PC and it just doesn't make any sense. And so maybe this makes more sense in the context of the PC.
Mm-hmm. So you think tiles will go away at some point?
They're going to have to. I mean, or you're going to have to figure out some sticky way to get them on the screen all the time, whether people talk about
sticky tiles.
Putting them,
sticky tiles. That sounds good.
You know, like a sidebar like we used to have, or a active desktop type stuff, whatever. They might ultimately just make no sense. You've seen the designs. Like they're in the taskbar. Like you have a big I just don't think they make sense on a PC.
Yeah.
All right. And Raphael has something to show you. Actually, I wish Brad did, because then I could have him shoulder, shoulder
so
tap
you, should,
you directly.
You should actually bring
shoulder
that article
tap.
Up. Cause, oh, jeez. Raphael has a nice image at the top of that article that is a real thing that he did. But you know, he uncovered My People in the early RS3 builds. And now in this new RS3 build, he uncovered a coming My People feature, which is called Shoulder Taps. And it's works like Winx did in Windows Live Messenger. It could be super annoying. Like it could be a giant graphic, an animated graphic. It could be accompanied by sound. So it could be like a fist, you know, banging on your screen and it's down in the corner. And he started sending me some of these, I think it was last week. And it was like, dude, seriously, like, you're going to be kidding me.
This sounds horrible. This could be shut off, right?
Yep. But you know what? I bet a lot of younger people will love it because, you know, young people are terrible.
horrible. I'm trying to pull it up, but my internet went down. And it might be because I was tenting. I don't know.
Tenting?
I'm tenting. For some reason, let me try it again. Raphael shoulder. I don't know. It says I don't have any internet connection all of a sudden.
Oh, it's because you actually changed the computer a little bit, so now it doesn't work.
It does. Exactly. What the heck?
Oh, man.
Well, just you know what? Go to therat.com and click the link, or go to Raphael's site. What is Raphael's site?
No, it's on Therat.com.
It's on Therat.com. All right. You'll see
The article
is... Oh, it just came back. No, it came back. As soon as Alex Gumpel walked in the studio, he fixed it. With his mere presence, they just fixed it. Here it is. Shoulder tap.
Shoulder
tap. Whoa. What's that big finger?
That's the tap. I know. See?
It's like, what did Facebook have?
What's happening? This is poke?
Poke. Yeah.
Does it look like that, or is that your artist's conception?
It can look like anything you want. It's an animated GIF. You can make it anything you want.
Oh, crap.
I know.
Can I turn that off?
Well, that's the thing. So obviously they're going to let you turn that off, right? Because how annoying would this be?
So annoying. and you can do a wink. Oh, wait a minute. No, this is like winks, which was 12 years ago.
So by the way, you can see like 12 years ago, look at my face.
You weren't happy then.
That was me reacting to the same exact kind of feature.
Right? You didn't like that then.
You look happy about it.
You got to appreciate the consistency, though.
True.
Yeah. Wow.
You know?
Wow. Wink. Wink. Did somebody kiss you? What is this? What is she doing? What is that?
I know. It's terrible.
That's terrible. All right. All right. So shoulder tap is a new feature in Red's Drone 3, build 16184. Make sure you use it to let Paul know you've updated.
How much you love
it. How much you love it. It's a great feature.
Oh, God.
Wow, that is annoying.
So annoying. Ooh.
And we already said that you don't like tiles, Paul, so we don't need to really belabor that. Finally, I've been waiting all day. Xbox News.
No, actually, we already covered this one, too.
Never mind.
Sorry.
You've been sneaking this stuff in.
No gong needed. When
did you mention the PS4 and the Xbox? Did I miss that?
Yeah, I was during the earnings thing. I was trying to
earnings. You were trying to, you snuck it in. That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, in that case, let's take a break because the back of the book is just around the corner. It's time for beer, tips, tricks, and more. But first, a word from our sponsor, the fine folks at Cloudflare. We've been talking about Cloudflare now for a while. I'm a big fan of Cloudflare. A lot of us use it. And there's so many features I could go on and on. So I'm going to maybe kind of start, drilling down a little bit. I know you know Cloudflare does DDoS protection, and it's a CDN. But did you know Cloudflare is also a kind of an internet firewall? They call it a web application firewall. And it's really awesome. You can easily use Cloudflare for your personal site for free. But they have plans also at $20 a month, $200 a month, custom plans for enterprise. The idea here is that the free folks, you and me, and we all should use it on our blog. There's no reason not to, or our website. The free folks are giving them a lot of data about the kind of bad stuff going on the internet, which helps update for everyone. It's a crowdsourced, massive IP reputation database that everybody gets the benefit of. When one customer requests a new web application firewall rule, Cloudflare analyzes whether it applies to the more than 6 million domains in the network. And then if so, they block that bad guy for everybody. We all benefit. Cloudflare does so many good things. I want you to go to cloudflare.com/twit and read all about it. CDN, web optimization, load balancing, DDoS protection, HTTP2, IPv6, HTTPS rewrites, 30% performance boost with no additional configuration. I can go on and on. You know the best thing to do? If you go right now to cloudflare.com/twit, you can sign up for a webinar with this guy right here, Jameson Sundell, who is he's fun, he's clever, he's got a great accent, and he also can explain in plain English everything Cloudflare does and why it's a great solution for you. And this is exclusive to you Twit listeners only. So take advantage of this. Just go to cloudflare.com/twit and sign up for that free webinar, live chat with one of the best guys at Cloudflare. And ask him, what do I get with the free tier? It's great for anybody who wants to play with Cloudflare or put it on their website, like their personal blog, for forever and become part of the massive neighborhood watch for the edge of the internet. Cloudflare, it's the operating system for the edge of the internet. These are good people, and they want to help you make the net a better place. Cloudflare.com/twit. We're big fans. We love Cloudflare, and I've known these guys for years, and happily recommend them. Now, back of the book time. I see Paulie Boy Thurrott. What's your T-shirt say?
It's a Therat t-shirt.
I did the wrong chest.
That's nice.
Yeah.
What do you mean the wrong chest? There's a right chest?
I lifted the wrong side. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm backwards.
You're one of those guys, though, and I love that. It can make your pectoral muscles independently.
That's me. Yeah.
That's it. He's showing off now. Your tip of the week, my friend.
Yeah, so an all Xbox tip of the week for Mary Jo.
Thanks.
Yep. No, just a reminder that it is the beginning of the month and it's time for another 30 days of free games with gold. And they're actually, two of the four games are Star Wars games. The one that's available now is The Force Awakens. No, it's not called that. It's called, let me look it up. It's called The Force Unleashed 2 on the Xbox 360. You can get that now for free. It's normally $20. And on the Xbox One, the free game right now is called Guiana Sisters, Twisted Dreams, the director's cut. This is kind of a cool old school parallax scroller with really neat graphics. And then later in the month, Lara Croft and the Temple of Osiris will be available on Xbox One. And then Star Wars, where is it? Lego Star Wars, the complete Sega, starting on the 16th. Yeah, so kind of a good month again on that stuff. And on the app pick of the week, it's actually the Office mobile apps, which I was just making fun of earlier. But the reason I'm mentioning them now is I've gotten a bunch of emails from people recently who have told me that these apps used to be available in the store on a Windows 10 PC, but now you can't find them. So if you go open the Windows Store app and you type in Word or Word Mobile, you will find that you cannot actually get to that app. They still come up on Windows phones, but they don't come up on Windows 10 for PCs. And so you can actually still get them, as it turns out. If you go to your web browser and you type in Word Mobile for Windows 10, you'll get a link to the store. And if you click that link, it will open in your browser, and then it will open a little dialog that says, do you want to open this in the store? And then you can go to the store and get it. And so I guess the question is, why would Microsoft be hiding these things? And I actually think it might be tied to this coming centennial release of the full Office apps. I think they're trying to push people away from these mobile apps on PCs because they're just not full featured and they don't really show Office in the best possible light. In fact, you could probably make the argument that the Google Docs type web solutions are better than these apps because I actually think they are. And that eventually what they'll want people to do is be able to get the real apps in the store. Plus, I know that Microsoft is also kind of increasing their push toward Office 365 and to take full advantage of these apps and to take any advantage of the full apps, you pretty much have to have an Office 365 subscription. So anyway, if you do want to run the mobile version of Word, Excel, or PowerPoint, you just have to search the web. Just search, PowerPoint mobile for Windows 10. You'll get the link. You'll be able to get it.
Great. I think that takes us to our enterprise pick of the week. The chat room's been begging you, Mary Jo.
I knew they couldn't wait for this one.
Yeah.
Power BI Premium is the enterprise pick. So this is actually more interesting than the name may suggest. Power BI is Microsoft's data analytics product, data analysis analytics.
Business intelligence, it stands for.
Yes, business intelligence. So right now, there's a free tier of Power BI, and then there's the other tier, which is the pro tier. Pro tier costs $10 per user per month. If you're an enterprise company, that adds up really fast because right now with Power BI Pro, even if you've got users who just need to read data and not create data, they have to pay the same price. With Power BI Premium, Microsoft's adding this new ability for people who don't need to actually create data and just consume it to basically be grandfathered in for free, is my understanding. So now, as of today, there are going to be three different tiers. There'll be the free tier, the $10 per month tier for people who need to create business intelligence data, and then the premium can be added to Power BI Pro for people who just need to consume. Very exciting for people who we're spending a ton of money on Power BI seats and now can more effectively kind of pass those costs off and aggregate the costs. Power BI Premium announced just today, just in time for Windows Weekly.
Yep. And everybody was saying, break in with that story. It's huge.
It's huge.
It's huge. Code name of the week.
Yeah, let's talk about Walking Cat, because Walking Cat actually broke the lid on the Microsoft Surface laptop right before it got announced. He's really good at finding this stuff. He went and found all the renders of the Surface laptops and posted them the night before.
His was the one with two Type A ports, though.
Yeah.
Somehow.
That didn't make Microsoft too happy that he did that, but you know what? He's a leaker. It's his job. He sent me a note and he said, I think the code name for the Surface laptop was Lynx, L-Y-N-X. So I started asking around among my contacts, and that is correct. The code name of Surface laptop is Lynx. Why? I don't know.
Why?
He also thinks that new mouse is codenamed Mavis.
Because of Mavis Beacon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Mavis is a mouse, the cartoon, right?
Oh.
Oh, right. Mavis is a mouse, right.
The child, the child show is Mavis the mouse.
Oh. Yep. So if he's right, Mavis was the mouse and Lynx is definitely the Surface laptop. Thank you, Walking Cat. That's your code name.
I like it. I think we deserve some beer.
I do too.
And I, you know what? I feel I've heard this beer before,
I may have made it a pick a while ago.
The name is quite memorable.
It is. My beer pick is from Pike Place Brewing in Seattle, because that is where our meetup is going to be next week in Seattle. This beer is called Kilt Lifter, and it is it's a Scotch ale, also known as a wee heavy.
It's a wee heavy.
If you like Scotch, you know the peaty taste of Scotch, you would probably like Pike Place Kilt Lifter. It's hard to say. I've had it a couple times when I've been in Seattle. It's a good beer. It's one of their flagship beers from Pike Place Brewing. Not too heavy, 6.5%. It's just kind of a good, bitter Scotch ale. And if you go to our meetup next week, you should give it a try.
I like my podcasts like I like my Scotch ale, good and bitter.
Yeah, we should talk about the meetup, I guess, right?
Yes,
Rocky and cold.
If you're going to build, or even if you happen to just be in Seattle next Thursday, May 11th, we are having our meetup 5:30 to 7:30 at Pike Brewing Company, which is on First Avenue in Seattle, down near Pike Place Market. Also near the Gum Wall, if you are a Seattleite, you know where the Gum Wall is. Yeah.
I didn't know they had a Gum Wall there, too. San Luis Obispo has a Gum Wall.
Yeah, they have a Gum Wall. So we're going to be there 5:30 to 7:30. It's kind of a smallish venue, so first come, first served. Be there early if you want to come into the meetup. And
it's going to be nice.
Yeah, we'll be there. Yeah. It's going to be great. It's a brewery. It's fun. It's a brewery. Pike Place Market, also fun. Right, walking distance from the convention center where we're having build.
Maybe they'll let us throw fish at each other.
Yeah. Like in Pike Place Market. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing we wanted to mention is Paul and Brad and I are all going to be in the Netherlands in the middle of June.
Wow.
Office 365 Engage conference in Harlem. We're going to be doing Windows Weekly live. What's so funny?
He's just checking it out. Yeah, going to Harlem.
Oh, God,
yeah,
Brad. Yeah. There's Brad again. Brad is always there.
Yeah, yeah.
Brad will be there, Paul and I and others.
I may never be coming home from this one, because let me tell you, Amsterdam in the summer.
I want to move
in. I know. Yeah, man.
Oh, boy.
June 21, we're doing Windows Weekly Live from the event, Office 365 right. Engage. And then we're going to have a meetup either before or after that will be hopefully open to people even who are not at the conference. But I think the actual Windows Weekly, you may have to go to the conference to go there.
I think it's going to be in one of the show, you know, the conference rooms or whatever.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll be there live. We'll be broadcasting the episode from the Netherlands that night, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, we'll know as we get closer. We'll know for sure, but I think we're going to work this so that anyone can get into the meetup.
It would be nice. Yeah,
yeah. I think that's the right way to do it.
Me too.
And I'm not going to be here next week. Megan Maroney will be.
All right.
Doing the show because I'm going to my son's graduation in Boulder.
Yeah. Nice. I'll be in. Wait, when? When's this?
Well, he walks. That's the term the kids
next
use.
Next week, right?
He walks on Friday, the 12th.
Oh, I'll be in Boulder Friday this week.
Of this week?
No, you're going to be in Seattle next week.
No, on Friday I'll be in Boulder.
Well, would you please next make Friday my bed and you know, make
put
the kettle on for me, and I'll be there a week later.
Is there anything you'd like me to tell your son that it is?
Stay away from the legal marijuana. No, I guess legal here now too. I'm really excited.
Your checkbook is particularly excited, right?
Can't tell you.
I would imagine.
Can't tell you how nice that is. I think this will be next fall will be the first time in 10 years I haven't had to write a tuition check.
Wow. I just got a chilly up my back when you said that.
You'll know what that's like someday, Paul.
Oh God. That's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, we didn't save up for it, so it's coming straight out of the checking account.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Anyway, that's the way it is. I'm proud to say that he won't be starting life without any college student loans.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's kind of the... If I can get to that, then I'm done. Mm-hmm. Then I'm washing my hands of the whole mess.
Yep.
I didn't build him a treehouse when he was 8.
Mm-hmm.
I never played catch with him.
You know, he didn't get the TV.
Didn't build a TV in his bedroom. You know what Panos doesn't say is, I didn't get to sleep ever because my dad was building TVs in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I learned.
Like he might have been sleeping outside more than he was letting on.
Paul and Mary Jo, thank you so much. It's always fun to do this show. We do it every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. If you want to stop by, say hi, join us. Chat room's always open, 24/7, irc.twit.tv. You can also watch live on the live stream at our website, twit.tv/live. YouTube.com/twit has a live stream, Twitch and Ustream too. Or listen, we have audio streams as well. So if you're in the car or you just don't want to waste a lot of bandwidth of seeing our pretty faces, you can listen. You can listen. And if you can't do it during the show, you can always do it on demand. Every show we do, really, the live stuff is just watching us make the real product, which is the podcast, which you can download from
Nobody wants to watch the sausage being made, Leo. That's crazy.
Get the sausage, not the sausage making. If you go to twit.tv/dubdub. Or where, you know, use your favorite podcast client. There's lots of them. TuneIn, Stitcher, Overcast, Pocket Cast. Every platform has its own. But subscribe. Whether you have Twit apps, too, on all the platforms, too. Subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. And I know you don't want to. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.